You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning at 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this.
Good morning and welcome to Friday's OTB AM. Hope all is well with you. Myself and Owen with you here on a Friday morning. Owen, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Budapest was good.
It was great, yeah. It was last weekend now.
I know, you've probably been through the travel review, have you?
Yeah, 100%.
And what was the highlights of that?
In-depth, we did it in great
depth.
Ellert
Bat, yeah. Ticked off. What was the, what were they like?
So.
What was the, any sort of indication that you were there is what I'm looking for.
They were thermal and... That's probably the best adjective I can use to describe them.
They were thermal.
I basically read the TripAdvisor review and I've learned off all the lines. I did not go.
Did you see any of Budapest?
No.
Right.
Not really, no.
So you'll have to make a return trip.
Well, exactly. And next time I do it, I'll make sure to bring it up on the show and you can give me an on-air sort of travel recommendation list once again.
I've nothing more to offer you other than go to the Gellert Bat and go and have a walk around that little sports island in the middle of the river. I've nothing more. Literally, no, I mean, but I do appreciate that it's two more things than you've had from your 3 or 4 days, whatever it was you were there, 5 days over the weekend.
Yeah, no, yeah, I guess a disappointed touristic experience is how I would put it, but an enjoyable one all the same.
But not a disappointment in general.
Exactly, exactly. So I think we're all happy.
And move on.
And move on.
Two things we wanted to touch on at the top outside of your trip, non-trip last weekend. First of them, I was listening to Off the Ball last night, making dinner at home, getting kids ready for bed, that sort of thing is what's happening in my life at that time of an evening. And next thing, I am sort of hearing a conversation that I definitely had never expected to hear at the top of the show, which was Nathan in conversation with Stewie Byrne, who'd be a regular voice in football and Off the Ball, about how he's written an album. And not only has he written an album, he's gone and recorded it and sung the theme tune, wrote the theme tune and recorded the album.
That's amazing.
Are you aware of this hidden talent?
No, not at all.
So there was a great tease. We'll play some of this for you in the football show, was the tease. So, you know, I'd obviously always love the football show on and tune in every night.
It's a good old 2 hour tee up right there, isn't it?
I made an extra effort to tune in last night. And sure enough, here's what happened. Top of the football show last night.
Let's hear it. Stewie Byrne, superstar.
He is crap.
That's class.
Yeah,
isn't
really,
it?
Somebody was playing that in the office earlier on, and I was like, "Who is that?" I was like, "There's," and I'd heard separately that Stewie Byrne had sung on the show last night, and not for 1 second did I put two and two together. Like, that sounds unbelievable. How did we not hear this before?
It's also, that song was about Wes Hoolihan.
Was it?
Listen to the lyrics closely. It's like, you're raw and da-da-da-da-da.
Footballer.
Street footballer does not quite come up. I think he's more sort of using euphemism, but it's...
Superstar.
Class. Like, it's very 80s influenced, obviously. He mentioned some of his influences last night.
What were the specific influences?
But it's bloody exceptional, was the main thing that I thought. Like, because the concern you have in that instance is, let's say you were to land in here someday and go, listen, lads, I haven't spoken to anybody about this, but, like, I've written an album, I'm big into writing songs, and, like, it was a huge deal for him, by the way, because he had said on the way over, actually what happened was, he was driving over here yesterday, pulled up a set of traffic lights, and Paul Galvin walked across the road in front of him. And as Stewie Byrne was coming over, he was unsure as to whether he was going to play the song or not. And then he saw Paul Galvin and he thought, well, here's a guy who has had a sports career and has gone on to choose a totally different path that nobody would have expected. It's an omen. It's a sign. When I get over, I'm going to play the music.
Fair play. Like, obviously comes from a talented family. Of course, his sister was teaching Kevin Kilbane how to DJ there a couple of months ago with Groove Armada. So big shoes to fill there from that perspective. But highly impressed.
So what I'm saying is, if you were to land in and say, here, I've got all this hidden talent that I've been working on, like, we're in the lap of the gods, because it could be shite.
Well, I've got no talent, so I'll never come in and say that. But I'll probably believe that I'm talented, so you
But that's exactly the point. So we could go and play the song, it could be shite. I'd have to sit there and go, oh, and that's, look, keep at it. It's great. Like, you know, sounds like a great thing to be doing. Sort of, you know. But like that wasn't the case. There was no, you didn't need to pretend with that last night. It was great.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Like I was going to say, it's almost the best thing we've heard from an Irish footballer ever. But I think that would actually be doing an injustice to the track because I can't actually think of too many other Irish footballers who produced anything of that quality off the football pitch.
It would almost be an insult to say to Stewie Byrne that he's written the best football song of all time.
Yeah, calling it a football song is a bit disrespectful, I think.
Yeah.
It's just a great song.
But that might also be true.
I actually need to listen to the full track before I say it's a great song. But from what I've heard, the it's like when back in the iTunes day, when you'd get like a 15-second teaser. That's what I've got right now, and I'm paying the 99 cents.
And you're hungry for more. Good.
Hungry for more.
Well, he's considering sort of releasing it out over the next while, so watch his space, I think, is the short story with that. Or you can, I presume, the full, you can listen back on offtheball.com to last night's segment as well, where the full 2-odd minutes of it was played. The other thing that sort of caught our interest during the week was if you were tuned in on Wednesday...
Yesterday morning.
Mm-hmm. Nathan had been over at the Etihad Stadium the previous night and had been checking out Man City against West Ham and was not overly enthused by the game, as anybody who would have seen it could agree with. And he also spoke about the fact that he really only went over there to talk to Declan Rice and gave... I know the line wasn't great, but he gave good detail about the mix on afterwards and how he was sort of hanging around and looking to get his microphone in front of Declan Rice and like painted it in full Technicolor great detail. And you were just, I was only, like the thing that I was watching it and I was kind of thinking, the only thing this is missing is if somebody had taken any video of it, you could actually have seen what had happened.
Mm.
And he had video of it. He
really?
Just didn't bother mentioning this to anybody.
Even though he was on live with us yesterday morning?
Here we go.
Boy.
Should we grab a quick word, Declan? Should we grab a quick word, Declan?
Can we grab burned?
Should we grab a quick word, Declan?
Like, at some point in the future, there are going to be epitaphs are going to become digital things that you can actually put a GIF on or you can put some sort of highlight on. And that could be Nathan's.
We must tweet out that beside the GIF of, I'm not sure if you've seen the James Harden GIF, the Houston Rockets basketball player, where he like turns his head towards the interviewer and then turns his head swiftly away and then gets the hell off the court. It's as close as I've seen anything to that. I'm not sure why Nathan didn't show that to us yesterday morning. It's almost as if he's embarrassed of it. It's almost as if that was the sole reason he went over to that match and it was all over in 2 seconds.
Yeah, totally bizarre. And like, I'm sure that Declan Rice, I mean, I know Nathan doesn't watch anyway, so it's fine. Had no clue who Nathan was and had no clue that he was from an Irish broadcaster. I'm sure it was just a good luck to you. Like, there was no slight against the nation, as Nathan would have it.
Well, if he doesn't know who Nathan is, then the rest of us are all doomed.
Rife, any thoughts on any of that stuff? Get your thoughts into us on the hashtag and we'll bring those to the audience between now and about half past nine or maybe even a quarter to ten. And we've bloody stacked show for you this morning as well. Lots of really good people to speak to. We're going to tell you what's happening in the sports pages in just a few minutes' time. Phil Thompson's become a bit of a regular on a Friday morning over the last few weeks, so why deviate from that? We're going to get Phil's thoughts on the Merseyside derby this weekend, Everton against Liverpool on Sunday afternoon, so we're going to get Phil's thoughts on that at about 8:10. The rise and rise of the goalkeeper in Gaelic football is going to be the subject matter for Paddy O'Rourke, who will join us after that. The sports news in the company of Darren Cleary at about 8:45. And then at 8:50, we're reuniting the dream team from last weekend. Ronan O'Gara and Alan Quinlan are going to be here. Ronan O'Gara from Brisbane this morning ahead of their game against the Reds tomorrow, and Alan Quinlan in studio here. And I'm sure we'll be reflecting on the fact that the engine of Peter O'Mahony did not overheat last weekend in the end.
True. Yeah, that's true.
I was just thinking that
was your big argument last weekend, wasn't it? You were saying that it would overheat, and former professional rugby players Ronan O'Gara and Alan Quinlan were correct, lo and behold.
No, you're totally misrepresenting my point clearly again. I was saying
you said
that
Peter Mahoney was going to explode into an incredible Hulk-esque character.
I'm still saying, by the way, that he has that capacity, and like he's proven that over a long number of games. Like mostly, if you're looking at a game... I'm exaggerating now to make my point, and I'll say that before I start off this, but mostly when you're looking at a game that he's involved with and there's a bit of a schmozzle, generally it's a short odds bet that he's somewhere in the middle of it.
Kind of like the person who stops the schmozzle is always in the middle of it. Let's not forget that.
I'll also add, he's never trying to stop the schmozzle.
If there was ever a schmozzle in any walk of life, Peter O'Mahony is somebody I would want on my side.
No,
in fact,
true.
He's probably above any other sports person, somebody I would want on my schmozzle side.
But maybe not captain material, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely not. The exact opposite of that, because I want him on my schmuzzle side. I want him to be my captain. Whereas I don't know what sort of anti-Munster bias you got going on this morning.
The Shehan schmuzzle side could be a brand new feature on the show.
Wow, that's as good as alliteration gets right there.
Right, just coming up on 8 o'clock on this Friday morning, it's a delight to have you along with us, and lots of sports conversation coming your way in the next hour and a little bit, so stay tuned for that and do get your thoughts into it as well. We do want to hear from you, but we're going to kick off the back pages this morning with a pretty cool photograph of Timothy Lamb, the back page of the Irish Independent there. That is Roscommon CBS booking their place in the Connacht Senior Cup final for the very first time. They had a win yesterday and play Garibaldi now in the final in the middle of March, and Timothy is pretty excited. It's not a sport that obviously they're generally associated with, and that's great.
Yeah, it's weird that we've got like a couple of stories like that in schools rugby over the past decade or so. Like Ross Cray a couple of years ago was a big one as well. So it's great to see that. I said to you this morning, your beloved Roscommon doing well, which seems to irk you more than most.
Piss off on is my short response.
What's wrong with Roscommon?
Well, I'm not from Roscommon. Roscommon's absolutely fine.
You just seem to get particularly exercised whenever we describe you as a Connacht man or a Roscommon man.
It's just that it's just bullshit. Is the, like, if I constantly refer to you as a Cork man,
be like, fine. I'd be like,
after a while, you'd be like, this is bullshit.
Wow, I'm sensing a lot of skeletons in the closet here.
There's no skeletons.
Did somebody from Roscommon hurt you?
No, I do have a lot. I'm from Westmeath, and it's not like you could. A good catapult would lob a stone into the Shannon, right? So that's the sort of proximity, which isn't quite the official border either. But I have a lot of mates who would be from roughly my vicinity, some of them even further into Westmeath, and would be Connacht supporters. And there's a constant debate about whether one should support Connacht or Leinster. Now, I'm from Leinster, the province. I would just find it weird that even though my local club, which is right beside where I grew up, is officially plays their trade in Connacht rugby and supplies a load of players to Connacht rugby. I'm from Leinster. I would find it weird to be supporting another province.
Well, I guess
that's the background.
I guess nationalism and provincialism is a fluid thing, Adrian. So you do you, and congratulations on being a Leinster man.
Oh, you're a wanker. De Gea ups the ante at United and bid for $500,000 a week deal is the other headline here, that star goalkeeper wants to double his money and match Sanchez as the club's highest paid player, in a headline that gets repeated at least a few times a year, that David De Gea clearly rates his worth. And whether United do likewise, I would argue, is maybe a bit of a law of diminishing returns, that the better United get, the less weight that De Gea has in that argument when he steps into that office and said, listen lads, if I wasn't here, you're screwed. That's actually becoming less of an argument the better United get.
There is truth in that for sure. Like, he is still would he be front runner to win Player of the Year once again for Manchester United this year? I think probably since the turn.
Pogba could be up there.
Pogba, Marcus Rashford would certainly be kind of leading that as well. So I'm not sure if he's a dead cert to win another, though. I think he's got like 4 Player of the Year awards, which is quite something for a goalkeeper at a club. But yeah, you're probably right in something you're saying. But there is also the element of Manchester United this summer now saying that they need to keep all their good parts if they're going to actually make that full improvement. Because let's face it, there probably is still an element of a new manager bounce going on at Manchester United. How do they actually double down on that and make sure that it becomes a long-running, solid thing? And it is. Plan A is keeping your best assets at the club. And I think David De Gea, £500,000 a week, it's a lot of money for a goalkeeper. But unfortunately, they've screwed themselves with Alexis Sanchez, haven't they?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that money actually means a huge amount to United anyway, but like, and I'm not saying for a second, by the way, they get rid of him. Like, he's clearly one of the best goalkeepers on the planet, and you'd find it tough to replace him. But at the same time, I'm just saying that when he's sitting there saying that now, suddenly they have a little bit more strength in that conversation. So that's De Gea at United. Dr. Crokes en route health for final as Buckley is cleared. This was the story you might have seen some of the coverage on the Off the Ball social channels yesterday. Johnny Buckley, right, Cullen Keys here, has been cleared to play for Dr. Crokes in the All Ireland Club final later this month. He was before the CHC last night to overturn the red card that he picked up against Mullinocta in that semi final. And the footage ran on the Off the Ball social channels yesterday of exactly what went on. It hadn't been picked up by cameras. It was shown on TG Carr, and this exact incident hadn't been picked up by the cameras, but anyway, as it turned out, there was a little bit of a sort of a low velocity rabbit punch, is how I might best describe it, to the stomach of his opponent, and the CHE decided last night that it didn't deserve a red card and that he was clear to play.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of divergent opinions on that one, isn't there? If you look at the kind of reaction to the thing on social media. And I would need to see the exact wording of what the appeal was last night. Was it an overturning or something like that? Because quite often, if you've got such divergent opinions, now granted, social media is by no means a place to make any decision on any part of anybody's life, but it is sometimes a mini straw poll of what the opinion is. And like sometimes you'd be a little bit surprised that something gets overturned because there is such a wide spectrum of opinions on it. But Dr. Quirk would be delighted with that. He's going to be such
hugely important.
Like I was just thinking about this the other day. I mean, who's going to come in for him in midfield in the eventuality that he would miss out? And thankfully, they don't. From their perspective, they don't have to think about that now. So that just kind of, you want all the best players on the pitch really for that encounter. Because as I was saying a couple of weeks ago, I think it's going to be one of the best club finals we've had in a long, long time.
Are Dr. Crowe's watching that footage going, oh, this is great, this clears them, I wonder. Now, we don't know because, as you said, the exact wording hasn't been released, but I wondered, how early.
Somebody filmed that, and it was brought in as part of the hearing last night, so you can only assume that Dr. Crokes looked at that and they thought this certainly helps our case. Because, as you say, there was no television cameras actually grabbed that. That wasn't a TG Cahir camera, clearly. That must have been somebody's club camera or potentially just somebody behind the goals. Like, it's hard to actually tell. The suspicion is that it was part of the hearing and it definitely would have been viewed as beneficial from a Dr. Croke standpoint.
OK, we'll come back to that a bit later on. I'll show the footage too, around 8:30 or thereabouts. On the Irish Examiner this morning is a picture of Joey Carberry. Giant strides, rides for Ronan O'Gara. Carberry has become a live option at test level. This is the weekly Ronan O'Gara column in the Irish Examiner. Johnny Sexton menacingly looking over his shoulder. Maybe it's not that menacing, he's just kind of benign glance in Joey Carberry's direction. Interesting to hear the conversation with you during the week that he was saying that you were kind of offering the idea that you'd be a great support to players now, and I'd say you're sort of cajoling them along and giving them little bits of breadcrumbs as you go. No, not really. I mean, if they want to come and ask me, that's fine, but I ain't going to them.
Yeah, fair enough, I guess. And I guess there's a lot of truth in the idea that you learn via osmosis quite a bit in those sort of environments that you just watch and you learn. And from a Joey Carberry standpoint, I would contend that the thing he's learned most from is just being on the pitch and starting big European games for Munster this season. And, you know, there might be little things that he's seen that Johnny Sexton do in training or seen him do on the pitch or seen him do up close and personally at Leinster, perhaps, that have influenced how he behaves and ultimately influences how he plays the game. But really, it's putting that into practice, and it is wearing the red shirt at 10 or the whatever it was, 60 minutes against Scotland. That's where Joey Carberry really becomes the next Johnny Sexton, not by like sitting there and chatting to him, you know?
Yeah, maybe it's a bit of both though too. I do think though, if you are Carberry or any of those 10s coming up, like how likely on the other side of that are you to go over and go, hey Johnny, listen, I was just thinking about, you know, that lovely sort of wraparound move that you do, the loop pass. Like, I'm trying to become a bit of a master of that. Like, what, we do a few sessions?
Yeah, Johnny, your kicking is really, really good. You're so good at rugby. Is there any chance you could do a few one-on-one sessions?
The Irish Times, meanwhile, it's rugby all the way here as well. Six Nations far from backing the new league. This is the story that blew up over the last 48 hours, that World Rugby had a plan to initiate a brand new rugby World League. Our Nations Championship, as I've seen referred to it as well, and Gerry Thornley writing here that not everybody's fully behind this thing, and clearly there was some statements from the Rugby Players Association as well, also in the guise of their president, Johnny Sexton, this week, and they're not overly enthused by it either. Proposal has more holes than a hoops trainer, is the line of the morning so far in relation to that particular story, and we're going to get the thoughts of Ronan O'Gara and Alan Quinlan on that as well a little bit later this morning. It's the theme that's picked up in the Times Ireland edition as well. Sexton leads revolt over league plan. Alex Lowe and Matt Hughes writing here that international rugby's at war after Johnny Sexton and Owen Farrell participated in an angry revolt of senior players against proposals for a new global championship. 40 players, was one report that I read, 40 international players had jumped on a conference call on Tuesday night to pick through all of this, which would be a conversation that I would love to have been able to eavesdrop on, how even the mechanics of 40 people on a phone call actually works. But maybe it was just Johnny at the sort of top of the table in the sort of Dr. No role, you know, saying, listen, lads, listen up, hush up, gather around, that sort of thing.
Yeah, like how much is each rugby union going to make was a question posed, and then it just does a zoom in on Johnny Sexton. He's like $1 million, and he does the, you know,
little
the
finger into his mouth.
Exactly. That, I presume that's how the conversation went.
Waterford to make Walsh Park return is the other story here from Paul Keane. That it looks as though Waterford, a lot of controversy about this over the last couple of years, are going back to Walsh Park. That there was a bit of an infrastructure issue there, but it's all going to get sorted. And it seems as if, according to this report, anyway, that they'll be back as early as this summer.
This summer, yeah. This is actually an interesting one because Walsh Park's current capacity is 11,000, if I'm not mistaken, and it's been a long, long time since they've played a Munster Championship game there. And the reason why they haven't played a Munster Championship game there for so long is because 11,000 people, it is viewed, is just too small a crowd to have at a big Munster Championship game. Mm. This isn't too dissimilar to, you know, the sentiment we've been hearing around Parnell Park over the last couple of weeks, is it? It'll be interesting to see what the reaction is from the Waterford public, from the travelling public for those two games, from the other county as well. Will they be demoralised and completely gutted by the fact that they can't actually go and see their team play in the flesh because there's only 11,000 of them allowed in? Mm-hmm. Or will they get around to the idea that actually this is fine, this is fair, this is better than Waterford having to play their two home games in a neutral venue? Once again, echoes of the sentiment that we're talking about when it comes to Dublin at the moment.
There was a stand issue of some sort. I'm just trying to find the exact line here, but there was some sort.
Obviously that was the issue. The issue wasn't down to the fact that there was too little people. When it comes to last year's competition, it was a health and safety issue last year. But I'm talking about previous Munster championships.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. What's the capacity of Parnell Park?
Something similar, isn't it?
Right,
12-13 maybe.
Yeah, I mean it's an ongoing one. I thought we were going to get through a full morning without having to go at the Dubs and playing at Croke Park. Not to be.
Should we move on?
Let's move on.
Back page of the Herald is, I'm up for it. Duff ready to fight for cause in Celtic role. Damien Duff there celebrating with their late winner against Hearts midweek. He says, I'm ready for it. I know the role and I know the club and it's a massive honour. Celtic is more than a club. Here you're fighting for more than that. You're fighting for a cause as well. I know what the club means to fans. It means the same to me, so I'm ready. I understand the club and Celtic Football Club aside, myself and football, I'm all about emotion and enthusiasm, as you can see by the picture there. And also, Spurs and United on alert for Bale sale, says Charlie Rusholm. So, Gareth Bale looks like he's going to be out the exit door at Real Madrid this summer. That would be how Tottenham Hotspur go to the next level. Do two things. Give Pochettino what he wants, and what he wants is a transfer kitty to spend on players. And a perfect available player who's got a bit of an emotional attachment to the club is Gareth Bale, who becomes available. If you keep Maurizio Pochettino and you get Gareth Bale, are Tottenham Hotspur Premier League title contenders next season?
Now, they've spent almost nothing over the last 2 years, right? They
haven't bought a player since Lucas Moura last January.
Point one. So the evidence of that they're going to book that trend anytime soon is scant. And even if they were, would it be Gareth Bale? Would he want to go back to Tottenham? Like, maybe he would. There is that attachment there, but they've obviously been hot links with United as well over the last few years. And their capacity to hang on to Pochettino, obviously, is another thing that's speculated upon in some of the papers this morning. But so I think I appreciate that we are actually in the business of hypothesising, but does that win them the Premier League?
Does it make them title contenders?
It definitely makes them title contenders. But, I mean, you could probably argue that they are title contenders already.
Well, they're closer to sixth than they are to second at the moment.
Fair point.
So I would say that they're not at all title contenders and that they're slipping further away from that veneer that they've shown us over the last couple of months. I think it's actually a crossroads here. It's like Gareth Bale and Maurizio Pochettino or another player of Gareth Bale's ilk or multiple players, big spending.
Yeah.
Or you lose Pochettino and you probably don't sign anybody else because that may be the primary reason why Pochettino leaves.
Yeah.
He's cut a frustrated figure over the last week or so. I just think if you're Daniel Levy, you've got one last punch. Can you be the man who oversaw a club that went from challenging for top four a couple of seasons ago, not even being in the Champions League, to actually winning the Premier League? That would be one hell of a great business story. And I'm sure that's something that appeals to Levy. He's actually on the back of the Sun as well this morning. We'll get to that in just a sec. But Out of Touch is the back of the Irish Daily Mail. Fulham axe Ranieri over dated style. And O'Driscoll hopes squad went on the lash in Belfast, says this story by David O'Dornan. So Brian O'Driscoll hopes the Ireland squad have gone out on the piss during their training stint in Belfast. The former Ireland captain believes an old-school drinking session would help Joe Schmidt's men get over their defeat by England in the Six Nations and error-laden performances against Scotland and Italy. I think this group of players and coaching staff aren't panicking. The whole country seems to be panicking, but I don't think they are, they said. Or he said, I should say. Back page of The Sun. is Spurs in Real trouble. I presume that's a pun. I presume it's Real trouble, not Real trouble. Ambitious Poch eyeing the exit door. And of course, Real Madrid, one of the clubs linked with getting their hands on Mauricio Pochettino as their next manager. Back page of the Irish Daily Star then is also ran. Claudio sacked again after slump at Fulham, while Parker takes the helm with Clark also in line for role. The aim now for Fulham really is get relegated well. Like, just having Claudio Ranieri there with no real plan of succession in terms of how you're actually going to be playing football in 12 months' time. Like, Ranieri could barely plan for next week, let alone for 12 months' time. I think that's a really vital step. Mm. And, like, Scott Parker, I think, taking a chance on him, certainly on an interim basis, they could do a hell of a lot worse than that. Back page of the Mirror then, it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. United scrap plan to talk to any rivals after Old Trafford legend's stunning start as stand-in boss. This is David Anderson reporting that he's the only candidate for the Manchester United job, with the club ready to ditch plans to talk to alternative managers. So good news for the Norwegian. The Racing Post then this morning is big game baggies. Albion value to land another vital victory at promotion rivals. It's Leeds against West Brom tonight in the Championship at 7:45. It's Claudio Ranieri leading the way in the Telegraph and Guardian. The Telegraph goes with dilly ding, dilly dong, Ranieri gone. And the Guardian then goes with Ranieri remains a charming man, but he is not lucky. He's not a lucky charm after all. Paul Wilson talking about the manager's sudden sacking by Fulham. And you've also got Johnny Sexton there pictured on the back of the Guardian. Rugby blueprint under fire. Plans for a new World League criticised as undercooked.
He's like a lovely, friendly uncle, isn't he? That's why I feel nothing but sympathy for him.
I don't think there's much room for sympathy in football.
No, there's not, and that's a bit of a shame, but, like, just want to put your arm around him and go, be fine. I presume he doesn't really care either.
Just give them a big hug.
Give him a big hug. Claudio, right. Thanks for that, Owen, for now. We've lots more coming your way. We've Alan Quinlan joining us, Ronan O'Gara joining us, Paddy O'Rourke as well, to look ahead to the weekend's GAA and talk about the rise and rise of the Gaelic football goalkeeper. I am delighted to say that we have the Liverpool legend Phil Thompson on the show next here on OTB AM. But first, let's hear from John Giles talking Jurgen Klopp on last night's Off the Ball.
Well, I think Klopp has done a great job for Liverpool, there's no doubt about that. But when he first came to the club, or after the season or so, my attitude to the club was, he's a one-trick pony with a great trick. And I still think that. I still think that. I think tactically and all that thing, I don't think he's into the tactics and this. I think it's all go, go, go. You know, against Manchester United, there was no go. But to be fair to Manchester United, Manchester United defended very, very well.
Yeah, sure.
But then you come 3 days later, and it is go, go, go. That's what, you know, like, I think he's done a great job doing what he's doing for Liverpool. But I don't think he's a tactical individual. I think he is, this is what we do, and this is what we intend to do.
Yeah.
And he sticks by, and he has the courage to stick by that.
Energy and enthusiasm.
Sometimes it's right,
and
sometimes
emotion,
it's not
yeah.
so right.
Phil Thompson, good morning to you.
Good morning. There's John going off again. Another anti-Liverpool slant on it. He's like between gritted teeth. Was he actually saying Jurgen Klopp was good, or was he saying he was bad?
I think he's saying that his line, I think that he frequently
he's a
uses...
a one-trick pony.
Yeah, it's a good trick, though, is the line.
Yeah, it's not a bad trick, is it? It's not a bad trick. He's done very well. I don't know where we'd get a one-trick pony if he did leave us. As I say, I just don't know where these ex-Man United people come from. I really don't. Anyway, let's move on, guys.
He obviously, we wanted to get John to talk about the Merseyside derby at the weekend, and looking back over even the last five derbies, at Goodison in particular, there's been actually just one goal between them over that time, despite the difference in their league position at the minute. Are you expecting it to be as close this weekend, Phil?
Absolutely, guys. This is always one. It's been ever thus when I was a fan, when I was a kid. It was always. You were worrying about it. Now and again, you would get a big scoreline. I can remember Everton beat me when I was a kid, and they beat us at Anfield 4. But we got our own back on them when we went to Goodison and beat them by 5. But they were a little bit different. So, yes, I'm expecting a very tight game, no matter where they are in the league. They did have a good result against Cardiff. But I'm expecting it. That early part of it, mind you, in fairness, I was expecting it last week against Manchester United, but never materialised the aggression from both sides. But maybe we might get it on Sunday.
the derby's notwithstanding and their capacity to obviously get up for a derby notwithstanding, is this as bad an Everton side, Phil, as you've seen over the last couple of decades almost?
I wouldn't say it's as bad as it gets. I don't think it's functioning as well as it can. Still don't think he actually knows anywhere near what his best team will be. I think if we talk about Fulham, maybe Ranieri area in a second. But I look at it, and all those signings that have been made at in the summer, right at the death, I think it confused him more than it settled his mind about what was going to be his best defence. And I think he's had problems right throughout the season. So I think there's better things to come from Everton next year. But I think Silva needs to be given time. I think he is a good manager. I know people are always... Premier League is, isn't it? You have a good couple of results and everybody's, oh, this is the way ahead. And then you have a couple of bad results and he's got to go. I think we've got to be a little bit calmer about what we see and where the future lies. And I think Everton are like that at the moment. I'm expecting a really, really competitive derby. Some of the players that they have there are better than what they've been given in the last sort of 6 weeks or so. So it should be a decent contest.
You speak about patience there, Phil. It seems like a strange thing to say at this juncture, since they're going for the title, but could it also be applied to Liverpool? Because Jurgen Klopp has been saying this week that this is the start of something, not the end of something.
And I totally agree with that. And I don't know whether I spoke to Ivan a lot on Monday nights, particularly in the early part of the season. I expected a Liverpool challenge for the Premier League title, and I did, but I kept Manchester City. But I said, what you will find happen is that Liverpool will be very, very close to Manchester City, very close indeed. But I thought City would win it. But I said, Liverpool, if we don't win it this year, we will win it next year. And I think that is where Jurgen Klopp is trying to come from. City will have sort of better players, an extra year older. And I thought, next year, Liverpool will win the title. But we're making a fantastic fist of it this year. So I can see where he's trying to go. He's not setting up. He's not a one-trick pony. He does have a vision for the club. And to quote a lot of managers, a project. And he sees this being established for many years to come. And I told you guys last week that is a fear in some people, is that they don't want to see Liverpool having that cycle again.
Yeah. I know I offered a slight counter opinion to that, and I spoke to a good bunch of people afterwards, and they were mostly with you. I'm happy to tell you that actually people are sort of generally of the mind that they wouldn't want to see Liverpool win this thing, most of the neutrals anyway. Are you concerned about the run? Like, City have a pretty straightforward run upcoming now, and it feels like it's a brilliant few months actually ahead. Normally we don't get this kind of two-horse race until it becomes a bit more apparent, sort of maybe closer to the end of the season, but for the neutral again, for the next few months, looks so exciting. But are you concerned in some ways? Like, the obviously City meet Spurs in the middle of April, I think it is, and they've a run of five games that really should be money in the bank for them.
Yeah, it is, but you know, it should have been money in the bank against West Ham the other night, and they made very heavy weather of it, and it should have been money in the bank for Liverpool against Leicester, against West Ham. So there's maybe a few twists and turns in this still to go. I've no doubt with that, but it is fantastic to have at least a race for it, because Manchester City, but by the turn of the year, had it won last year, so it will be good. I can see it going, but you're saying Liverpool's is difficult. I think once we've got Everton out of the way on Sunday, ours is relatively good. Tough games we've got are both at home, Chelsea and Spurs. And you can see at any given time they can be flaky. So both run-ins are quite decent. So it's whoever can keep the nerve, I feel.
It looks like, yeah, there's Spurs at the end of this month from a Liverpool point of view, and after the Everton game, Burnley and Fulham after that. But, I mean, there is the... Frequently we hear sports people and former sports people talk about the intensity that comes with games like this one at the weekend. There's the intensity of that, Phil, obviously, on Sunday. Then there's Burnley, and then the intensity of the return leg in the Champions League as well. Like, it can sap them, obviously, those types of games.
Absolutely, but it goes for Manchester City as well as Liverpool. You do expect that. That's what your players are. But you can see now, you know, after the weekend, down to double digits in the in the Premier League fixtures, and you know your quarterfinals of the Champions League, it's not far away. So it's not a thing where you've got to sort of try and rotate players. It's play your best team. Go with your best team. Deal with your injuries when they come, and you should be all right now. And that's why I feel as though keep rotating. You lose a little bit of that energy levels that you have. And it was like Liverpool went for these breaks in Dubai and to Spain, and we seemed to lose the edge rather than it giving us the edge. That first game back from the boat trips was absolutely dreadful. So need to keep the energy, but I think just head down now and go for it.
And I presume the same applies on Sunday. What do you? Are we going to see another draw between these two? How do you see it going?
No, it doesn't. I see Liverpool winning it. I do. I think the first early part of it, again, like with Man United, first 20 minutes, first 15 minutes maybe, we get through that, game settles down, and I think we are better than Everton. That goes without saying. And I'm expecting a Liverpool victory by 2-0.
Yeah, I think the fact that Liverpool are better than Everton does definitely go without saying. And just one final point on the game, Phil. I'd be interested to get your take on how much better they are on paper. Like, how many of these Everton players will get into the Liverpool team?
At this moment, I wouldn't say one. And I think even the ones who are not too bitter of a blue would probably say the same at this moment. You know, the win against Cardiff was... Cardiff were there for the taking. They'd just been drubbed by Watford just before it, so they were low on confidence. But man for man, there's nobody up. You could really see the Everton players getting in, and that's not a sort of bias. I'm probably quite predict that some of my guys on Soccer Saturday would say exactly the same thing. But no, not really. But when you get the energy, you get that sort of drive and everything that comes for the derby game, that's why you get it, that you have it, particularly at Goodison Park, that you have a level.
Just finally, before we let you go, Phil, I wanted to get your thoughts on Brendan Rodgers, obviously back in the Premier League. Opinion here a bit divided about him, because obviously there's a lot of Celtic fans and people thinking if he actually was after success, he should have stayed at Celtic. But your thoughts?
Yeah, I can really. Listen, he's done absolutely wonderful at Celtic. Absolutely wonderful. It was great. He was always a good coach. People said, oh, he had to go up there to sort of resurrect his career. I think he was always a good manager, a very good manager. He's won a lot up there. And if it was the same thing down here with Liverpool, I would be upset if my manager was to sort of walk away when he did. You know, Charlie Nicholas has been telling me for quite a while, going back to the start of the season, always not happy between the board and Brendan and what Brendan wanted and what he seen the vision for Celtic. So there was a divide there. So maybe when the offer came, I'd always said, guys, you guys will probably be, the Celtic guys will be looking and saying, why Leicester? Leicester's not bigger. They're nowhere near as big. Celtic are a bigger football club the way it is. But the finance and the money down here, down south, is a lot to offer managers. And Leicester have a lot. They've just been in the wilderness since they won the title. They've got a fantastic manager, have Leicester. And I really believe that. I think they've really pulled up trees to get Brendan Rodgers down there. That will upset the Celtic fans. But I would think, and the way they are, forget about them. They have to move on now, Celtic, and the same goes for Leicester.
It seemed, Phil, that Rodgers' stocks had plummeted a little bit by the time he'd finished up at Liverpool. Has time kind of eased that a little bit, and kind of there's more memories of what he actually did achieve in terms of getting so close to the title?
That is exactly it, guys. I don't know where this thing was stock had lowered, because he had that last sort of 12 months at Liverpool, and things had gone sort of stale. Brendan was still a very good coach, going as near to the title that he had done with Stevie Gerrard, with Sturridge, Sterling, Suarez. You know, he had them playing away, and I'd sat in his office with Brendan, and he explained tactics to me, and I thought, wow, that's quite clever. That's very well done. So I don't get that. I don't give that just because it didn't go right in that 12 months at Liverpool. He had done his stuff at other clubs, Watford, Swansea, and and then he'd moved on. And that's the way you do it. And I think he'd learnt a lot, and I think he's learnt, and he used that at Celtic. You do think it's crazy. The treble, why give that up? Why do it? Mm. But as I said, I think there was a lot more going on there than what the fans actually know. And that's the reason why he's thought now is the time.
Phil, thanks,
William. I actually thought he would have a chance at Chelsea. If Sarri, right, the talk was that he was going, I thought he would have a chance there. And maybe his guys, his people, his agents or whatever, maybe he tested the water at Chelsea and they've gone, no, we'd look elsewhere if we wanted a manager. And I think that's why he plumped for Leicester.
Yeah, maybe he's in the shop window too in a Premier League context on that point, a little bit more at Leicester than he might have been at Celtic. But yeah, we'll see how it pans out over the next while. Phil, thanks a million.
My pleasure, guys. Have a good weekend.
Cheers, you too. Phil Thompson on the line there ahead of the Merseyside Derby this weekend. B-Rog for Chelsea.
Well, he's obviously been there as a coach before, hasn't he? And Roman Abramovich has a particularly good relationship with him. Like, there was a famous anecdote of Brendan Rodgers coaching Abramovich's son.
Right.
Kind of.
Well, that's kind of endearing with the boss, isn't it?
On a one-to-one basis, I think. Like, Abramovich's son wasn't a professional footballer.
Oh, I know, yeah, but why wouldn't you?
Like, but it's kind of like, I don't know, a sad enough errand to be kind of say. It's like, pop out there and get milk for the office sort of thing. It's like, here, go out there and train my son.
I don't know.
He's not a professional footballer or anything.
I think you're being unbelievably cynical on, which is not like you.
On a more positive note, let's hope that this derby weekend kind of lives up to the previous iteration of this derby weekend, which I'm sure you'll remember, just before Christmas.
Which was shite, if I remember. Was that right?
No.
Which one was it? What happened?
Well, Arsenal against Spurs was one of the games of the season so far.
Right.
Which Arsenal won. And then you had that, like, a ridiculous moment with Jordan Pickford and the Divock Origi goal.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, two instantly memorable, well, a memorable moment and a memorable game. Mm. So if we get anything near that this weekend in the two derbies, we'll be doing well.
You know, I'm sort of love reading out YouTube comments and there's some absolute pearlers here, but Ronan McLaughlin saying that stop fighting between yourselves. Every Friday you snap at each other. It's becoming tiresome. Ronan's like the child whose parents are arguing. He's like, please stop bickering.
I hope Ronan doesn't grow up to have any traumatic experiences from his childhood from what we've done. Yeah.
I don't mean to snap at John. I apologise for that.
Well, useful at this point.
No, I mean, what you're supposed to say is you don't snap at me. That's fine. Absolutely fine.
No, you absolutely do snap. And, you know, I'm on a kind of short...
Short fuse
at the moment. That's the phrase I was trying to think of.
8:30 in this Friday morning. We've loads more coming your way. We've Ronan O'Gara joining us from Brisbane, and we've Alan Quinlan in the studio as well to pick through a few interesting stories in the world of rugby. Albeit a down week in the Six Nations this week. Paddy O'Rourke as well is going to talk to us very shortly about the role, ever-evolving role, of the goalkeeper in the GAA. So that's coming your way in just a few moments' time. Before all of that, Michael Meehan and Michael Quirk joined Nathan on last night's Off the Ball and gave his talk a take even on Kerry's superstar forwards.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed everything that I've seen of him so far this year. He's one of these players that come along, you know, not too often, and they're the type of player that just everyone in the country, you know, will watch and will ooh and ah over. And you know, there's going to be young lads in every quarter of the country, you know, watching up and wanting to be Sean O'Shea this summer and for summers to come. And I think that's something very special. And it's the all-around package, you know. He did something beautiful against Dublin in the first half the last day. It ended up going wide, but it was a dummy solo once, dummy solo twice, you know, taking two players out of it and then getting a shot away, and just narrowly missing from the good to 40 yards in the first half. And, you know, he can score heavily, and definitely what Mike referred to, you know, the amount of tackles and dispossessions I've seen him involved in, it's just great to see. You love seeing a flair player. But, you know, when you can back it up with the team ethic and the really real hard work and just desire to kind of, you know, put the team first, it looks and it sounds like he's an all-rounder. And, you know, the thought of him and one David Clifford forming a partnership for the next, you know, 10 years or whatever, it's quite daunting for maybe a lot of full-back lines out there.
And the response from the Kerry Mafia is, yerra, 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 yerra. Yeah, it's only February. Well, March actually today.
How did you know? That's exactly what our WhatsApp group is. It's just yerra, yerra, yerra. That's all we say.
Does it make you a bit, do palms get a bit sweaty when you hear like legendary players of the game speak about Kerry, up and coming Kerry players in such high tones early in the year?
Well, it's so early in the year.
Nervous, though, does it? Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
But this is a guy who's been playing Sigurdsson Cup football as well, and he's absolutely flying at the moment. So I've got no doubt that he is going to become an exceptionally good footballer, and he probably is close to that already. But let's just wait until later on this year.
Keep a lid on it for now. Plenty more football to be played. The ground isn't hard yet.
Yeah, like I know. He's like we've just come off the back of actually beating Michael's own Galway without David Clifford, Paul Gainey, and James Donoghue in the starting team. But no big deal.
Right, Paddy O'Rourke, I believe, is on the line. Good morning to you, Paddy.
Morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good. A few things we wanted to touch on with you this morning in relation to the rise and rise of the GAA goalkeeper is certainly a huge part of this. And we might start with, we want to talk about Niall Morgan, we want to talk about Rob Hennelly versus David Clark as well, but we might start before all of that with maybe the most talked about goalkeeper in the country at the minute, Evan Comerford. And whether or not, Paddy, in your opinion, Dublin, if Cluxton's obviously back in the mix now, but if for whatever reason Cluxton was unavailable, Dublin could and would go ahead and win the All-Ireland with Evan Comerford in goal.
Yeah, well, I was in at the game against Mayo there on Saturday evening in Croker, and you know, I seen a tweet afterwards from Eamon Fitzmaurice, and I couldn't agree more. He's beginning to look this year like a fella who's about to make the number one jersey his own, rather than just a fella who's stepping in for a couple of games while Cluxton is hurt. He looked very composed and calm in Croker on Saturday night, and obviously saved a penalty as well. He's stepping up to the mark now and seems to have slotted in and looks comfortable behind that back line.
What is it about Evan Comerford? People will have seen him obviously a little bit of him in the league. What is it about him as a goalkeeper that you're watching that stands out for you?
On a team like Dublin, he just has to specifically think about just his individual role. You know, you don't see him getting involved in coming off his line to join the attack or to be a spare man at the back to take a ball and break out of defence. You know, he just gets the ball, hand passes it to the closest, the cornerback, fullback, that's his job done. Then he's back in goals. He's constantly making sure that everything around him is perfect. His ball's at either side of the post. He has his kicking tee ready to go. As soon as the ball goes dead, you know, they have a 6 second turnaround is what Dublin want. He's ready to rock and gets the kickouts gone away. His kickouts the last day were the platform for Dublin against Mayo. Ball on the tee, and he was pinging balls 45, 50 yards at his ease, just into space, into pockets of space, and the Dubs were on the attack straight away.
Yeah, like, while you're right in saying that he probably wants to brush off the idea that he's an understudy to Stephen Cluxton, there is still hallmarks that he's modelled himself on Stephen Cluxton. Is that correct to say?
Yeah, he looks a carbon copy of Stephen. Obviously, the two boys are left-footed. You know, they're small in stature, but they're great shot stoppers. They look comfortable with ball in hand as well, and they look like they're natural goalkeepers. You know, I've seen him playing for the Dublin Miners back in Navan when Meade beat them there maybe about 3 years ago now. And like that, you could see that there was people talking him up already at about 18. You know, the supporters in Dublin had heard of him coming along and saying, we've Cluxton number two coming along here now in the next couple of years. And they've really, you know, they've moulded him into that position of being Stephen Cluxton's understudy, and he stepped up to it. And I think now this could be his breakthrough year, which, you know, whenever Stephen Cluxton does hang up the gloves, he'll just fit straight in.
One of the things that has been touched on over the last week or so is like the Croke Park element and all of that. You'll have played there as a goalkeeper yourself. Like, how vastly different is it? Because obviously you got wider sidelines and all of that. Because it seemed that the Evan Comerford performance from Tralee was vastly different to the one we saw in Croke Park last week.
Yeah, the pitch is bigger. You've more space. You know, when you go to a provincial ground, if you're playing a Meath and Navan, or if you're, you know, if you're playing Mayo down in Castlebar, you're trying to hit the man. In Dublin, in Croker, you're just hitting space because you know that you have the comfort line of there being a little bit more space around where you want to place your kickouts. And I think it certainly is a home comfort, because when the Dubs play there, they know exactly how far they need to kick the ball. You know, at what pace, you know, at what level of strength to just pop balls into that space, and the runners are going to be there.
We wanted to talk about Niall Morgan quickly because the idea of him as a fly goalkeeper, it's nothing new in terms of the GAA as a whole this year, but it's just happening more often, isn't it? And Niall Morgan getting scores from play in two consecutive games and all of that sort of thing. Is this a trend that's going to keep on going, Paddy, or have we reached peak fly goalkeeper, I suppose? Like, could you ever see somebody like Dublin kind of transforming Cluxton or perhaps Comerford even into a fly goalkeeper at some point eventually?
No, absolutely not. I think just the way that Tyrone set up in them games against Mayo. Mayo had nearly everybody back behind the ball. They were protecting a lead. The play had gone static. There was nobody within the Tyrone half. Niall Morgan comes up to halfway just to be an added player. It was kind of like a game of possession that he'd have in training. And there was nothing for him to do at home, so he just tipped on up the field. And the same down in Roscommon. Roscommon had retreated inside their own, basically inside their own 45-yard line, and he joined the attack. Now, I'd never see Dublin going down that route. I don't think they'll ever need to. And I think there's only a few goalkeepers in the country that can add to that fly keeper role. I know Niall plays out the field with the club, so he's more than comfortable on the ball and with ball in hand.
Yeah, you definitely feel it because you look at it and you think, Jesus, every county should be at this. And then you realise that actually how many keepers in the country actually have the capacity to kick it with such assuredness and calmness as Morgan did that day. So, I'd love to see players doing it like not with the last kick of the game, that actually in the first minute that our coaching team have enough faith in the manager who has that capacity to push them up in the first minute and say, listen, if the opportunity comes, go for it. Do you see that sort of thing happening a bit more with keepers that are capable of it?
Not really. I think when the game starts, you know, everybody has that extra bit of energy. The lads are buzzing. You know, if a team does get a turnover and the goalkeeper's off his line, like the All-Ireland Intermediate Club semi-final there in Navan, was it St. Aina's from up in Belfast against the team from Spittle in Galway when Manus Bracknock got overturned. If you can get lobbed early on in the game, I think that it gives the opposition team a platform then to go and attack, and certainly with the high stakes going forward from here on in the league and in the championship, I don't think teams will be pushing up and pushing a fly keeper up early on in the game. It's all right if you are chasing lead, a team has retreated and it's into the last couple of minutes that a goalkeeper can join the attack and add an extra man, so to speak, an extra body maybe to break the line. But no, I wouldn't be encouraging it early on in a game anyway.
There's a real battle for the Mayo number one jersey as well. Who's a better goalkeeper in your opinion, Paddy? Rob Henley or David Clark?
I would have always said Rob Henley. Even before and after what maybe happened in the All-Ireland final, I just see him being an all-round better goalkeeper, ball in hand, kick-outs, shot stopping and that. Now, it's just unfortunate for the county down there that they've two high quality goalkeepers and they have to try and pick and choose to maybe keep both of them on the panel, but I would have always gone with Henley over Clark.
Yeah, because it seems like the general consensus seems to be marginally the other way around, but you're seeing a bit more from Henley that impresses you.
Yeah, I think he's always been a very good shot stopper. Now people will criticise him for the mistake he made against Dublin and maybe they might go back to the All-Ireland final in 2013, high ball in and Bernard Brogan flicked a goal into the Hill 16 end. But, you know, I was never just that confident looking at David Clark thinking, yeah, he's going to make the number one jersey his own for 10, 15 years. I've always been kind of thinking Henley was a better goalkeeper. I would have always had him in first choice anyway.
What's the most important attribute? I mean, these all conversations we're having, there's so many different elements to goalkeeper's role now between kick-outs and free-taking and shot-stopping. What are the most important, what's the big emphasis for intercounty goalkeepers now in terms of your capacity? I mean, I'm presuming that the sort of 10, 15 years ago and beyond capacity to stop a shot is not almost even the primary focus anymore.
No, it seems to be, there's so much emphasis put on team meetings and county meetings on your kick-out percentages won, your possession, ball possession won, and, you know, you're coming in at half-time into a dressing room and a fella will come over with an iPad and he'll say, right, we've had 8 kickouts in the first half, we've won 6 of them into this position, we've lost 1 over here and we've lost 1 down the middle. You're going to have to, you know, go to the corner back, or you know, this pocket of space out to your left is the one that you've had most joy with. The kickouts has really put more emphasis on the goalkeeper. Even training drills and what lads are focusing on now has completely changed. Like back when I started out, maybe in about 2008 on the Meath squad, you were looking around at other keepers and it was a case of you had 2 midfielders and you had 2 half forwards who would compete for their kickouts. And it was try and get the ball out there as far away from your own goals as possible. Let them compete for it in the air. And then you had to be a good shot stopper and decent under the high ball. So it's gone completely more kick-out based, where you have a lad who's able to pick out passes there, 30, 40 yards, pop balls into space, get a quick kick-out away to a corner back and just maintain possession. You know, it's gone 9/10 of the law now is possession in football. And the higher your stats are as a goalkeeper, it seems now that the better you're playing.
Is that, I mean, is it too simplistic, finally, to say that that's just the Stephen Cluckson factor? Was it something that was going to happen anyway, or was it down to him?
I think mainly it was down to him. A lot of inter-county coaches tried to follow his example and to see how beneficial it is for a team and how much of an influence on the game the goalkeeper can have by, you know, if you can get a quick kick out away to a wing back, let's say, who's free, and he can make 20 or 30 yards of, you know, an advantage or up the field. That's as good as kicking the ball 70 yards and a midfielder catching it, you know, in a crowd of players. You know, before the mark came in, there was really no advantage to driving it out to a midfielder who was going to catch it and be swamped by 4 or 5 lads in around the middle. Whereas if you can get the ball out quick, you're on the attack, you've started a platform there to build an attack up the wing, or so be it.
Paddy, thanks a million. Take it easy.
Cheers, lads. Have a good weekend.
Paddy O'Rourke, former Meath goalkeeper, on the line there to discuss all that stuff to do with goalkeepers, which is extremely interesting topic at the minute. One comment that's come into us here on YouTube from Fellaini18, Kerry Snobbery stinks of Owen. I kind of think Owen stinks of Kerry Snobbery might be the more appropriate thing, but bear with Fellaini18 for the second. He might be forgetting that Kerry lost twice to Galway last year. Galway also missing Kerry Finn players Comer and Conroy. Rather a Dublin 5 in a row than that crowd winning.
It's stuff. Well, it's certainly not going to be Galway that's going to stop them anyway.
Oof, that's more Kerry Snobbery stinking of Owen right there.
No, it's just a fact. We was in Croke Park last year when Dublin in third gear absolutely coasted into an All-Ireland final.
I know, but what he's suggesting is that they obviously have a better recent record against Galway, mostly. Mostly.
Who's got a better recent record against Galway?
That Galway have a better recent record against Kerry.
What's the recent record?
Mostly, I said. Obviously, not just the most.
No, like, mostly, that's incorrect. Like, let's not forget that they beat them twice last year, but if you go back to the previous summer when Kerry absolutely annihilated them in the All-Ireland quarter-final.
I know, and then if you go back, like, a couple of years before that even, it's like, look what happened then.
Yeah, Kerry beat them again. And again.
I'm just saying, you're moving away from recency. Look, I just think Fellaini-Eddie, there may be something in it. Darren, good morning to you.
Good morning, Adrian.
How are you getting on?
I feel like I'm right in the middle of an argument that started an hour ago, and I don't know what to do.
We did have a commentary earlier on saying that he felt that myself and Owen snapped at each other a lot and we should be more communicative and engage with each other's
forget that
thought process a bit more.
Owen just likes to poo-poo everything you say.
It's Friday morning.
If you say
it's
the sky is blue, Owen will be like, no, it's a different shade.
But it was a couple of days ago.
Owen's beloved Bows are in action later. The SSE Air Tristy League leaders look to make it 4 wins out of 4.
Are you going?
Down to Waterford.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to carry this weekend, unfortunately.
Well, that would be perfect.
Yeah, the same place, absolutely. Same province.
You really have no concept of geography. Perfect. You really have no concept of geography whatsoever.
Now he's snapping at me.
So you go down. Like, of course, it's perfect.
It's like. It's south.
And you're in the same province.
Yeah.
They're on the opposite coasts. Yeah. Like, they're on the opposite coast of the island.
But I mean, if you were a genuine Bohemians fan, that's what you'd be doing.
I'm literally not a genuine Bohemians fan. I hopped on the bandwagon and I'm still on it. I'm not trying. Like I told you before, I sat at the opposite end of the stands to the ultras.
Yeah.
Maybe in a couple of years I'll move over one row, and then maybe in about a couple of decades I'll be able to move over to where the ultras sit. But for now,
is that the kids' seats? Is that the family section? You said it.
There was a lot of families around me, actually. Now that you say it, yeah.
That's 4 family and kids.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, I had a good time.
After defeating Shamrock Rovers, UCD and Finn Harps in their opening three games, the Gypsies face a tough trip to Waterford without their number one supporter Owen in their corner. Waterford have lost two of their last three games. Bowes' perfect start continued when they edged their bitter rival Shamrock Rovers 1-0 in the Dublin Derby on Monday. Dinny Corkin was the hero. He scored the winner from the penalty spot. He spoke to Jamie about it on Off the Ball's League of Ireland podcast.
What's going through your head when the whistle is blown and you know you're the penalty taker, it's 0-0 in the Derby and you have a chance to score?
Yeah, it's very nerve-wracking, I'll be honest. I was very nervous. I looked at Wardy as soon as the ref gave, and I wasn't sure if he wanted it, and he just said, you take it. So I was like, right. And from then, I just kind of had picked my spot in my head and said, right, I'm going to go there and hope for the best. So I've missed a few penalties in the past, so that's obviously playing on my mind. But I actually didn't even hear the ref's whistle to take it, so it was a bit confusing. It was so loud, and the Rovers fans were actually shining lasers in my eyes, which is weird. I got green lasers, and I just, whoa. But luckily, I just kept me focused on the ball, and like I said, thankfully, I went in.
For you, it was actual lasers in your eyes.
Yeah, I didn't really look at the fans at all, because obviously I was trying to concentrate on taking the pen out. But yeah, about 5 seconds maybe before I took it, there was green lasers in my eyes, which was weird. But luckily, it didn't affect my vision or anything, so I just focused on the ball. So strange, though.
Yes, St. Pat's dropped points on Monday with a goalless draw with Finn Harps at Richmond Park. Harry Kenny's Saints begin the night in second ahead of a clash away to UCD. Two sides with title hopes meet at the Talla Stadium. Shamrock Rovers face a Dundalk side who've had a shaky start to the season. Well, after beating Sligo to register their first win of the season on Monday, Cork City welcome Derry City to Turner's Cross. Two teams looking for their first wins of the season's meet at Ballybuffet. Finn Harps entertain Sligo Rovers. In the First Division, Shelburne hope to make it back-to-back wins. The Reds entertain Cabinteely at Talca Park. Elsewhere, it's Bray taking on Limerick and Wexford meet Galway from 7:45. Damien Duff has revealed his ambitions to one day manage Celtic. The former Republic of Ireland winger has been promoted from reserve team coach to the first team following the departure of Brendan Rodgers. Neil Lennon is in charge until the end of the season. Duff is hoping he can do enough to get the job on a permanent basis, but he knows there is no point making plans in football, as the last few weeks have shown.
And not just the last few days, probably the last few months. You know, it was only 3-4 months ago and you know, with Shamrock Rovers under 15s playing in the National League there, and all of a sudden I'm on the touchline last night for Celtic first team. So I guess you have to have a giggle about the last couple of days. It's probably the quickest promotion known to man in any job, but listen, I'm ready. I'll crack on with it. I know the role, I know the club. It's a massive honour, and I know it's more than a club, I guess, like Barcelona's motto. Here you're fighting for more than that, you're fighting for a cause, and I understand that. And I know what the club means to the fans, and it means the same to me, so I'm ready.
Big news in the GAA world this morning, and Johnny Buckley has won his appeal and will be free to play in the All-Ireland Club Senior Football Final. The Dr. Crokes man was red-carded in the semi-final win against Mullinocta, but the suspension was overturned at the Central Hearings Committee last night. The midfielder is now free to face Galway's Cor Finn in the final on the 17th of March. OTBAM exclusively obtained the footage of the incident. Have a look.
Looking at the middle of your screen here. There we go. We got a bit of a slow-mo action on it as well. Referee a bit late to the scene. There we go. Johnny Buckley, in he comes. I mean, much ado about nothing.
Yeah, it would appear to be that the appeals board had viewed that footage and maybe other footage not available to the referee at the time and the angles that he saw it from, and have deemed that it was not a sufficient sending off. Not a red card. So Johnny Buckley free to play following that footage, which seemed to have cleared him of any wrongdoing in that incident. Rhys Ruddock back to captain Leinster against the Cheetahs in the Pro 14 tonight. The 28-year-old missed Ireland's Six Nations game against Italy in Rome last Sunday due to a hamstring complaint. Leinster head coach Leo Cullen admits it's been a frustrating few weeks for him.
He was due to play against Zebra and picked up a bit of a knock in training that week, so which set him back. But again, he's worked hard to get himself back, to give himself every chance. Rhys is, he's such a key leader in the group. He's spent so much time, you know, thinking about what's best for the team, and it's, you know, he's amazing qualities that he has.
Plans for a new World Rugby League are reportedly dead in the water. A number of leading international players, including Ireland's Johnny Sexton, spoke out against the proposal yesterday. The 12-team tournament would comprise teams from the Rugby Championship and Six Nations, as well as the United States and Japan international teams. Early indications are that the competition would begin in 2020. Among the players concerned cited yesterday, player load challenges from multiple top-level test matches in different countries and time zones in consecutive weeks, increased long-haul travel in short time frames, a lack of real opportunities for Tier 2 nations to progress. It's understood there would be no promotion relegation scenario for at least 12 years, while increased conflicts between country and club demands and potential impact on the Rugby World Cup and Lions tours, as well as the long-term quality and integrity of the international game. Now, World Rugby responded yesterday by saying the players' assumptions were inaccurate and that playing load is at the heart of constructive dialogue. The Telegraph cite a Six Nations source today who says the player's statement is a fatal blow to the tournament in the current format being shopped to unions and broadcasters.
We'll talk to Alan Quinlan and Ronan O'Gara about that very shortly. Niall Cavan on YouTube. In relation to the bail to Spurs debate, I heard that Real want Eriksen in exchange. Not that straightforward for Spurs.
Not that straightforward indeed.
You wouldn't get rid of Eriksen probably, really, would you?
No, it'd be a tough
old thing.
Not for Bale, no. I think Bale on his own would add a lot to the Spurs squad. I think you might actually sort of rediscover perhaps classic Gareth Bale, potentially. I wouldn't throw Christian Eriksen into the mix. The thing is, does Christian Eriksen go anyway?
Well, if he's going anyway, then it's a no-brainer. You try and cash in on that. But if you can keep Eriksen and Bale, all the better.
Stewie Byrne is a club legend, Darren.
Absolutely, yeah. And his song is really impressive.
Are you impressed by it?
Bit of Shades of Bono. Someone actually turned around and said, is that new U2?
Ah, come on.
That was me.
That was Owen, yeah.
That's an awful insult.
No, but
it's true, actually. It is the most
human.
Disgusting thing I've ever said about a human being.
Stop. Bono gets too much stick on this show and every show and everywhere in Ireland.
You're a fan, are you?
I'm a fan of his achievements. I think they deserve respect.
Yeah, but as a singer, as a musician?
As a musician, I'd be a fan of Bono the musician.
Would you?
Yeah.
As a singer?
As a singer, he's fine, yeah. He's very great longevity in a major. He must be doing something
right. But longevity is not like a... You know what I mean?
Absolutely, of course it is. That's a sign of success. Jeez. Maybe all those gold records. Maybe that castle in Killiney.
I don't feel quite as strongly as I feel about hurlers having to take off their helmets for the national anthem, but...
I didn't hear much about that at Congress, actually.
No,
it seemed to be a lot more serious matters at hand.
Funny that. Darren, thanks, William.
Cheers, Adrian.
Anthony Moyles. Ronan O'Gara is on the way, by the way, as is Alan Quinlan. We're going to get stuck into that World Rugby story with the two lads and a few other bits and pieces as well very shortly. But Anthony Moyles joined Owen on Tuesday's OTB AME, the theory for what the Irish rugby team needs to do to get their Six Nations ambitions back on track.
They need a good piss up this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that what you would have done during a time when the confidence was low?
Yeah. Get the pool table out, Frankie Dolan-esque.
it is a tricky one. Like, I'm sure, like, once the confidence is that sort of low, or there is sort of this mystique around why it's so low. Is it like sometimes there is much more ridiculous ideas than actually, you know, going on the piss for a couple of days or doing something to just distract yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely been a theory that's put out there by lots of other sources as well later in the week. Alan Quinlan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Adrian. I was the first one to say it, was it last week?
You were up there, yeah, yourself.
Monday.
Were you saying it on a Monday?
I think I said it on
Monday,
that's
the first. That was the first. That
the take's getting stolen now. It's disgusting, isn't it? Gordon Darcy and Brian O'Driscoll following suit as well.
We've run a guy on the line from Brisbane as well. But what it's too easy, though, isn't it? Like,
it's too easy to say, just go out now. But I think... the message kind of around that is just relax a little bit. It's not even to go out and get hammered. It's just to take a little bit of pressure off and maybe train a little bit less this week and kind of enjoy themselves a bit more, because it is a very highly pressurised environment, and up to this point it's worked incredibly well and they've kind of hit a bit of a stumbling block. And really, I've been trying to think about this, because everywhere you go people say, what's gone wrong with Ireland? And I'm trying to think about it, look at it, assess it, watch back games. I think the endeavour is still there. The passion is still there. Is the execution still there? Maybe a little bit. And that's coming down. That's on the back of the opposition putting on massive pressure on. Like, if you're the champions of any league or any at any level, I think when you go and play someone, the opposition are far more alert and determined to beat you. And I think that in the first three games, Ireland encountered three teams who obviously they had their own plan and structure, the way they wanted to play, but most of it was based around how do we stop Ireland, how do we frustrate them, how do we close down their space. And then they've kind of been put in a position of really intense pressure and a strategy around how to stop them. And they haven't really encountered that in a while, because usually they're on the front foot, they get over the gain line, they kick well, guys make line breaks and they score tries and they build pressure and momentum themselves. So they've had to kind of, they've just hit, that's kind of had an effect on them as well. And probably the English game was a bit of a hammer blow. Joe's mentioned that during the week. So maybe just take a little bit of pressure off, remind each other that we're good players and what we've achieved last year, and have a few points and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It nearly takes on a life of its own. Doesn't it?
Does,
that's the difficulty
yeah.
now, that it's like the Liverpool comparison, that like actually if there are a couple of bits and pieces going wrong, they might be fixed in the grand scheme. Let's say Liverpool had been fourth or fifth, they're out of the title race. That stuff might have just been fixed and come right, but the spotlight is on them. In
yeah,
a way,
and look, they can still win four games, Adrian. You know what I mean? It's yeah. going to Cardiff, beating France at home, and Wales are going to be a different proposition, but just to relax a little bit and maybe just remind themselves.
But it's difficult to relax when they. But that's the point, isn't it? That it's actually really difficult to relax.
It is. And listen, the Six Nations has always been an intense period. The only problem I would have if gone out for a few pints, if I was with back in my days, and I have to babysit Rog for the night, so I wouldn't be able to relax. I just have to mind him, you know.
We don't even have him on the line yet to get the slag in.
But it's so true. Like,
there's a good shot of the tree there.
And why would he have to babysit him?
Just to mind him that he doesn't get lost and ramble off somewhere, you know what I mean?
Would that be a thing? We all have that sort of mate that you have to look after on a night out.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know? Just keep him on track.
We'll get Ron on the line and put that to him, I'm sure, in a few minutes' time. But we did want to talk about the big story that's been doing the rounds over the last 48 hours that broke initially in the New Zealand Herald in relation to World Rugby. And these proposals that we'll try and make as succinct here as possible to bring people up to speed who haven't heard it just yet. And at some point or another, Tommy's going to put up the fixtures as well, that the potential fixture list that Ireland would have, just to give you a proper sense of what this new initiative might look like. So it's the World League, or the Nations Championship, as I've seen referred to by Brett Gosper, who's the CEO of World Rugby. The general ideas around this: Japan and USA would join the existing Rugby Championship teams. All the main Northern Hemisphere teams would take on the major Southern Hemisphere teams every year. Now, there'd be no relegation or promotion was the initial word that was coming through on this. So that would close the door to the likes of Fiji and Georgia and Romania and Samoa, etc. It seems for 10 years. That's been slightly countered by World Rugby, but that was the initial word that was coming through. So on the foot of that, 40 international players had a conference call on Tuesday. They'd said loosely that they'd welcomed the idea at the back end of last year, but had major reservations about it now. And those reservations were in relation to things like player fatigue specifically. And this was delivered through Johnny Sexton, who's in his role as president of the International Rugby Players. And it was to do with player workload, long-haul travel, lack of opportunities, obviously, for Tier 2 nations as well, and that those concerns, Johnny Sexton said, had been disregarded as World Rugby looked to turn a book, a big book, albeit. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Since that, Brett Gosper, who's the CEO of World Rugby, has been tweeting, say, the conversations with all the key stakeholders continues, and that it's still an evolving concept, and World Rugby themselves saying that the manner of the player's statement is not to their liking. So it strikes me as if at some point or another World Rugby decided they were going to fly a kite and say, here's our proposals. They're not exactly watertight, but let's see what the public mood is like. And the public mood is not great about
it. Yeah, I'm just very surprised that it's come to the point of a bit of a standoff here, that this wasn't kind of done behind closed doors until they had some sort of an agreement of where they're going and if the concept was going to work.
Mm.
Because it doesn't look good for World Rugby if you have all the players coming out saying, well, this is ludicrous, or this is not going to work, or this is something we don't want. I struggle to think how it's got to that point. The proposal was muted last year, then there was a meeting, obviously, in the end of January in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and all the key stakeholders were there. The players weren't there, but representatives from all the unions. And In principle, the idea is a good one. It's kind of, you could say it's exciting, it's something different, it's going to be more competitive matches, it's going to be, a different feel to another tournament. But Then you start peeling it back and you say, well, player welfare is the biggest one that's the concern. And international rugby players, there's been...
The tweets of Augustin Pichot there, World Rugby as well, outlining his own position, and he's also come in for a bit of fire under this. But they've been at pains, obviously, to try and pour a bit of cold water on
it. But they never mentioned anything about the promotion relegation when this came out yesterday.
They didn't, no.
To clarify, well, there will be promotion relegation after 1 year, 2 year, five years, 3 years, whatever. This is what we're proposing to do with the Tier 2 nations. Well, why not set up a Tier 2 league that they can do something similar and play against each other all over the world as well?
It's fairly obvious, I think, isn't it, that if you do the two tiers of 12, USA will certainly get relegated and will struggle to actually be team 13 and 14 and struggle to get promoted again, you know, and they need USA as part of this, because otherwise why would they revamp the entire calendar?
Well, yeah, and look, from it's kind of understanding in some ways, there's for and against with all these arguments on the game. They're trying to grow the game to bigger markets. So Japan is a massive market, a huge population, and North America. But the Canadians then would say, well, why are we being excluded? We want to go straight into this as well. And they could argue, well, maybe we're stronger than USA. But it's seen, the USA is seen as a kind of a sleeping giant, maybe, potentially.
It's fair enough, too. Like, I actually understand the thirst to include them in some sort of interest.
It's just hard to get it right, I think. And Pichot's, Augustin Pichot and Brett Gosper are pushing this. And to be fair, I'm not totally against it. I just think, how does it work that you keep everyone happy? Well, it's hard to keep everyone happy with any sort of proposal. The games are already being played, shall we say. So does the Six Nations. The summer tour is three tests, and then there's three tests in November. So that's, but you're adding in a semi-final and final at the end of November, which Johnny Sexton spoke about. To ask anyone to play five consecutive weeks in test matches is not good for player welfare. We hear the English players speaking about it all the time, about the length of time in their season. I read some stuff that Ben Young said yesterday that, okay, if this goes ahead and that we're actually playing more internationals potentially, and that we're going to have travel to the Southern Hemisphere and a lot of that, it doesn't dramatically change hugely the amount of games they're actually going to play, because they do. But historically, I think, because it's a league, will the top players have to play more of these internationals to make sure they're in the qualifying
positions?
Well,
that's the thing, yeah.
It does make them a little bit more, there's less manoeuvre for, you know, November is always a case of you play at least one tier two nation, so you have a chance to blood players and stuff like that. So there's a lot of moving parts to this. I think the biggest concern is the player welfare.
Yeah.
And then maybe the biggest concern is next in line is the tier two nations. So we probably have 8 to 10 teams who can potentially win a World Cup in 6 months. Ideally, you want to increase that to 13, 14. How do you do that? I know World Rugby have an ambition, and they do it. There's a lot of good work goes on in those nations, for sure. That sometimes they get bashed and it doesn't get mentioned. You know, particularly in the Pacific Islands, in Canada, in Georgia, in Romania, in Uruguay. John Lacey, the international referee at the moment, is in San Francisco working with USA, Uruguay and Canada, I think, for kind of 4 day blocks to try and help them around the laws of the game and get them up to speed and improve them. So there's a lot of good stuff like that goes on. There's a lot of good coaches. They help fund some of the coaches in some of the tier two nations and some of the rugby programs. It's a difficult scenario, you know what I mean, to try and increase the quality of those tier two nations.
But here's the thing, right? So part of the rationale here is to include the USA in some sort of major tournament to milk that market, right?
Yeah, so to try and get more and money, more investment, more sponsorship, more players.
And that's absolutely sound logic. I don't see any trick with any of that at all. And the same applies to Japan, right?
And wouldn't it be brilliant if USA were capable of beating Ireland, England, Wales, Scotland?
So what they've done here is something that happens in political circles all the time. They'll float out sort of that they've had a bit of a discussion about a plan and we haven't quite finalised it, but here's kind of what we're thinking. And they get all the feedback and they go, right, most of the stuff that we're talking about is not... The player fatigue one might be more difficult not to crack, but most of the other stuff is crackable in some way, shape or form, but they can come up with a solution to some of the other stuff. But when you do come to that solution, which I think is not, you know, particularly in terms of the promotion relegation thing, one thing that leaves that is left for me that is insolvable, doesn't it kill Rugby World Cup? Why would you need a Rugby World Cup?
It does kind of dilute it. That,
why would you need it? You already know who the best team... Every year now you know who the best team on the planet is. There's no requirement every 4 years to gather and have a tournament.
You're very right to say that it does dilute that. And so there's so many kind of... There's probably more negatives than positives here. And it's probably been driven more so by SANZAR, which are the Southern Hemisphere unions, because financially they're probably the ones in most need, particularly Australia, South Africa and Argentina, who need to generate more money and that they're financially have problems. So a TV deal to cover this World League will automatically give them a payday, a good slice of the TV money. It's a really tricky one. There's so many things. I think the problem World Rugby have now is, and I'd love to see it, I'm out of the game, I'd love to see all these games and be travelling around, maybe working for some of them, and the concept, and it might work brilliantly. and it might create more opportunities. So you'd now have a situation, Adrian, where you need to have a squad of 40 players probably for your international team.
Yeah.
That you do. You're literally swapping over from 1 week to the next and trying, you know... Does that dilute the national jerseys of teams? We saw New Zealand last November. They probably had three test teams. One where they played in Japan. They made a load of changes for the English game, load of changes for the Irish game. They probably had up in 50 or 60 players, I think, at one stage, being involved in those test matches around November. Steve Hansen got a bit of criticism from because that coveted all-black jersey is so hard to get and there's so much history with it. You'd probably see more of that if it happened. But I don't think we should knock World Rugby completely here and go, it's not a crazy idea, but I think there needs to be more conversations and more discussions about it. And going back to the Ben Youngs thing, his quotes and the way he spoke, he's a passionate Leicester man. So what does the Leicester Tiger fan think of possibly seeing very, very little of Ben Youngs in the future? Because they have their own issues in the Gallagher Premiership at the moment around number of games they play and, number of internationals. So it just, he mentioned that. What does my club think?
Yeah.
They mightn't see me as much, you know. So it's...
It might have the same kind of impact as the provincial game has had on the club.
Look, what's come out now is World Rugby have got to take the views of the international players on board and say, right... Obviously, there's a lot more talk and conversation to go on here. But I would like to see, maybe it's not feasible, to see a Tier 2 World League, that they're actually playing one as well, the Tier 2 nations, that they can say, right, we're playing regular competitive fixtures and that here's something we want to aim for to try and get to the top. But you just imagine there's going to be a lopsided situation for a couple of years with USA and Japan.
Yeah.
Japan have shown in the past for sure that in World Cups and when they get themselves together and they'll be actually very dangerous to this World Cup that they can hit those big performances on occasions as well. But you can imagine New Zealand playing USA in Auckland.
It'll be New Zealand B. That's the solution to the player fatigue thing.
Yeah.
Do you think this is like trying to combat, in a way, the view of rugby and the test culture that exists, that may be a little bit antiquated, that people see, personally I've got no issue with the test culture, particularly around November, like beating the All Blacks and stuff, I was happy as the next person about that, but the criticism is like, I should have run any friendlies and wait till they actually win the World Cup, that actually when people say, where's the trophy at the end of the year? Actually, here's the trophy. This is the World Rugby are trying to combat, to try and get away from this antiquated notion of a test culture.
We probably would have had that trophy in 2018, yeah. So it's, but look, it's the issue with rugby is there's a lot of historical, sentimental attachment to some of the competitions, particularly, and rightly so. Six Nations is an incredibly famous and historical tournament. You go tampering with that a little bit, and there's a fair bit of resistance. I wrote a piece there last week about, you know, the possibility of having promotion relegation, it's come up before in the Six Nations. And, you know, Georgia are ranked higher in the world rankings over Italy. Italy beat them in November, which was a really, really important fixture for Italy in case anybody starts talking about it. But I think promotion relegation to Six Nations is something that should be looked at. and you know, diluting the calendar year. And like, I love the concept of summer tours, and you know, you ask any of the players, are these friendlies? We never viewed them as friendlies. They never felt like a friendly.
But non-rugby fans do, and yeah, this is what do. They're trying to
and
target.
That's
is the non-rugby
understandable,
fan.
Yeah. But I look at the end. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think this has been commercially driven, and Kieran Reid has said that. And for the players, Owen Farrell, Kieran Reid, and Johnny Sexton, three high-profile players, to come out publicly with this kind of resistance and the statements they've made would indicate that they're poles apart in their thinking.
Yeah, but I think they can get around the table and actually.
Yeah, well, look, I think I'm surprised that it's got to this stage, that this kind of thinking and arguing and
publicly is maybe the biggest surprise.
Yeah, that it should have been done privately, and that they got some sort of an agreement where the players can say, "Yeah, look, we're pretty pleased and we're probably excited. There's still a bit of manoeuvring to go on, but the concept and the idea is something that we think is a good thing." But for the players to come out like this, I just think World Rugby and have maybe made a mistake that it's got to this stage, because what's happening now is people will hear the voices of the players over World Rugby, which is maybe shouldn't have got to that stage.
Ronan O'Gara, good morning to you. Good evening.
Hiya, how's it going?
We're just discussing the World Rugby proposals this week, the kite that's been flown by them. What are your own thoughts?
Yeah, I've been trying to read up on it because I knew I was going to be talking about it. So it's complicated. I think Quinny's points are very valid. There's a lot to it, obviously, but the addition, I think, of Japan and USA playing against, particularly New Zealand, they're mismatches every time. But it's the crux of the issue is it's all driven by money, 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 and that's what it's coming down to. But I think if you alluded to already that the players and the players' union are not really is an understatement. They are at loggerheads with World Rugby, and World Rugby have said they're very surprised with the players' union's reaction to it. So, I think it is disappointing that for some professional bodies that this is how it's been played out.
Yeah,
it should be, as you said, grown men in the room discussing it and getting it right.
Does that surprise you the most, Rog? It certainly does for me that World Rugby kind of let this proposal out, and then there's this negative reaction from the players. I'm just really surprised it got to that it wasn't done behind closed doors, that they could put something, draft something, a table of contents down on paper and say, this is what we're potentially looking at. We still have a bit to go to agree it, but I'm just amazed that World Rugby have kind of released it, and then the international rugby players have gone, hold on a minute, we think this is crazy. Basically, that's what they're saying. I'm just surprised.
Yeah, I think maybe between the lines, is there some big pressure from obviously the money men behind these decisions, and the fact that I think every nation is guaranteed 14 million extra, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's a case of you need to get your ducks in a row, boys, and this money will be guaranteed for you. And money makes the world go round, and there's uproar over here on the fact that the Pacific nations have been excluded for 12 years. It's just, you can't do that to nations like Samoa, Tonga, Fiji. You know, that's, I think, the beauty of rugby is the fact that so many good players coming from these islands, Smile Islands, and a lot of them end up playing in New Zealand and in Australia, but they have massive pride in their own identity for playing for countries like that. And rugby was a game for all shapes and all sizes and all people, and now all of a sudden it seems to me that there's going to be massive exclusion, and I think the supporters are probably hurt in that regard.
Yeah, World Rugby have issued a statement to say that nothing's been signed or sealed, and that actually the idea of promotion and relegation is definitely something they could look at. So whether it was part of the initial proposal or not, it does
they
seem to
they
me...
They just forgot that bit.
They forgot that bit, but they
but
can bring it back easily.
That was a retract, wasn't it? They didn't initially come out with that. They came out with that after...
Yeah,
after the reaction,
but
yeah.
So the
strong comeback from the players' union.
Yeah, and the point being that, right, that's easily fixed. You sit in a room, you fix it in 2 seconds flat. But the thing that we've just been discussing there, I don't know if you might have just not been on the line at the time, but the point, the thing that they can fix is that suddenly tournaments like Rugby World Cup become fairly redundant in the context of every year you know who the best team on the planet is. So why do you need to gather every 4 years to decide the same thing?
Yeah, and I think the idea of, I think in terms of reshaping and change, I think change is always necessary for the betterment. But there's no point changing something and then realising 8 months into something, oh, we've got this wrong. So it needs thorough thought through and thorough thought process about how you want to restructure it. And I don't think the World Cup will ever be devalued. I think that has a special place in their heart, along with Lions tours, and there has been proposals to keep those tours alive. But so much of it too is going to be based on, you know, when you look at the three games that the Southern Hemisphere teams play and then the five games that one of the teams has to play in a row, where are they actually playing and who has home advantage? Stuff like that still applies if you want to be the champion in this. But it's a league where, you know, I mean, in terms of the US coming in, because it's such a market with such growth opportunities and such big finance available, so that's why they're included. Argentina get into from the four champions, so it's a lot of, I suppose, the powerful countries that are getting looked after. But you know, I mean, there has to be an incentive for the growing or the up-and-coming nations in rugby, if you're looking to grow the sport. Otherwise, you're going to have, actually, I think, a diminished model.
Ronan, do you think that the sport actually kind of needs something as radical as this? Because it seems that this is almost like a fix. I don't want to say they're pressing the panic button, but it is radical. Do you think we actually need this in the sport?
No, but what I do think would be interesting would be, having spent a bit of time down here in New Zealand and Australia, I think what would be great would be if it could be managed, if they were flipped. So I think Ireland should be going to New Zealand in November, if it wasn't in New Zealand's November, and then the New Zealand and Australia, if we're able to flip to the reverse of actually what happens now, I think if both happens that we go to they come to Ireland when it's winter and we go to them when it's winter. It's a completely different game. Mm. So there would be potential in that regard to actually play, because New Zealand, from my generation of players, were completely kind of have a very, very different perception of what the reality is down here. We were in 3 weeks in New Zealand, and it was lashing rain and dark 4 o'clock every day in the middle of June. And then they actually get a good summer where you can actually play a decent rugby. I'm not using that as an excuse for underperforming down there, but the fact then that they come up to Ireland in November when it's the middle of winter in Ireland, when you could actually kind of try and make it more appealing to fans to come out and see a dry ball game.
Yeah.
Do a summer job. Yeah, it's a good idea.
It's a good question as to whether we actually need this thing or not, isn't it? Like,
yeah, but look, Roger's saying there, and I think it's important. We shouldn't be afraid of change. I think change is good. Change can be unsettling at times, but it can be good. And I think the reality of making the game more of a global game, and there's certain markets throughout the world. You look at football, the way it's a global game and it generates massive money. You look at the Premier League clubs across Asia, the way a lot of their money and finance comes from there, from jersey sales, from tours, from having fans there. So making the game more global, for sure. And that's the one kind of downside from rugby. It's not in those markets where there's massive populations and they're untapped. So yeah, the idea to do that is to make it more global, get a big TV.
It's not so much about who wins this tournament, it's more about the opportunity for the USA and Japan, essentially.
But the problem is then you've so many stakeholders along the way, Six Nations, World Cup, Lions Tours, all this kind of stuff, and then player welfare. And rightly so, the players are very strongly representative now. And if you don't have the players on board, you don't have a tournament. You don't have matches.
That would be the problem, though. If it is about who doesn't win, if it's not about who wins, then the whole thing is flawed. If you've got a competition that it doesn't matter who wins, then the whole thing's pointless.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter who wins. What I'm saying is the tournament is not built to create a world champion because we already have a tournament for that. Mm. It's built to ensure that the likes of Ireland and USA and Japan get games against the top tier nations.
Where does that leave Europe and Super Rugby? So if Ireland are playing in, hypothetically, if it was 2018, we'd probably be in a semi-final scenario. And I'm just saying hypothetically, and then what happens when that semi-final finishes? You have a very intense 5-week period, and then Munster, Leinster and Ulster are looking to rock on in Europe.
Yeah, and then Six Nations again.
And then, you know, you've two fixtures in November, you've two fixtures in December in Europe, then you have Pro 14, derbies around Christmas, and then you have two fixtures in January, and away you go, Six Nations. So it's you know... I don't know, it's just a very tricky one. There's so many kind of variables to what can and can't happen. But look, like I said, my biggest surprise is that this divide has gone public. Nothing should have been released about this until the players were on board and unions were on board and everyone is in agreement, right? We're happy with to do something based on this table of contents, X, Y, Z, whatever. And here's something that may work, and we may trial it.
You should go in there in some sort of advisory capacity.
Well, I'd be a good negotiator, yeah.
Steering committee is what I'm saying.
No, but look, the easy thing here is kick World Rugby and say, oh, this is just money. It
is.
We need money, but it's not just money, I said. It's not, you know, look, it is a chance.
It is, though.
To make the game global.
But that's for money.
Yeah, which are Premier League or any of the leagues. They need
I'm not saying it in a negative way or any judgmental way.
You look at the football TV deals, like, that's because the market wanted throughout the world. That's why the money is so. That's why Sky are paying $4 billion for Premier League rights, and BT are playing whatever. And that's why there's so many much market for that. But who's turning on the rugby in Asia to watch Six Nations? Or you know, there'd be a few expats and people who may be into rugby clubs in different parts. I've been to Singapore before and Kuala Lumpur. There's rugby clubs there, and there's a lot of expats. But in general, I mean, you know, you'll never get to the same level as football, but the concept and the idea is to generate more money and make the game global. But
yeah, I think they're probably... Sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Rog.
No, I just think I would say there would be an appetite potentially biannually for, you know, I mean, the top two in the Six Nations playing off against the top two in the rugby championships. There is an appetite, I think, for something different. There's most definitely... I think a thought for exploration on that front. But the radical change in terms of presenting this, this is how it's going, and nearly a take it or leave it option, it just seems that they've overstepped the mark World Rugby have, in my point of view, in terms of pressing this new formula on players because of... I suppose the financial rewards.
And they're trying to do this stuff, Rog, because obviously the Sanzar deal is up in 2020, that TV deal, and the Six Nations TV deals would run out in 2021. BBC, Virgin Media, ITV and NBC in America cover them. So these TV deals are kind of coming up in 20 and 21, and they're trying to, you know, create something different where there's one kind of global... scenario.
Like, why couldn't they add the USA into the Six Nations and Japan into the Rugby Championship, and that solves it?
Yeah.
Honestly, what's wrong with that?
I think every Georgian rugby fan would spontaneously combust.
I mean, you're back to the nitty gritty of whether you have promotion or relegation, and of course that's what we should have. We should have that now.
Because you can't do that, because of the geographic location of the USA, what do they have to do with the...
Well, the whole drive... I'm assuming that the entire driving factor behind all of this project is, as Quinny says, it's to make money. I don't say that in any judgmental way. That's what it is, and that's to grow the game. And you're not going to do that with the best will in the world by adding Georgia or Fiji or Samoa. You are going to do it by adding the USA and Japan.
Yeah, well, you are definitely adding two of the biggest markets in the world, no doubt about it. It's...
But there's no fairness around that, because you mentioned Fiji, Tonga and Samoa and the incredible players they have there, and they don't have the infrastructure or the populations to pack out 80,000 seater stadiums. But it's one that'll rumble on a bit.
Yeah, that too. But I think you look upon memories of winning medals. You look upon in our career when you're playing for your country. But like one of the most, I think, rewarding and satisfying moments that we had as players was going on the tour to Tonga and Samoa.
Brilliant.
I think they're the memories we have for a lifetime. Well, you just see the locals, you see what touring means, you see, I think, all the great values of rugby union when you go and you spend time in these countries, and you see essentially the survival mode of what these unions have and the challenges they have. I think rugby, especially the Tier 1 nations, have an absolute duty to look after these nations to grow the game. Mm. You cannot turn a blind eye to that. I think player welfare, is really important. But the most important thing, I think, at the minute is, given these kind of, I suppose, the growing nations, the Pacific nations, I mean, rugby in Spain is getting bigger. Rugby in Georgia is getting bigger. You have to if you come up with a 12-year proposal with radical kind of non-incentive rules, the game is dead in these countries, and you just, I think, shot yourself in the foot.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that aspect of it. My other big topic that I love to get into is how Leinster are a feeder club for all the other provinces, and that continues.
He's hard to listen to, Rog. He's hard to listen to this fella.
Jeez.
That continues with the news that Jack McGrath, it seems...
Have you your length of yours, Jan?
No, he's a red jumper on, but he's actually a Connacht man.
I go out of that. Jeez.
He's on the other side of the Shannon. And
Jack McGrath reporting that the reports are that he himself has initiated the potential to join Ulster next season in a very same scenario as the Carberry-Murphy deals that have gone through over the last little while.
No, it's not. Well, I think they're all different deals, Adrian.
Go on, yeah.
It's a very interesting one, and I think it caught me by surprise very much, so through in the fact, like, you're kind of going, why would Jeff McGrath go with Ulster? But then on closer inspection, I think what people sometimes forget, like, there's a massive competitor inside Jack McGrath, and 17 minutes coming off the bench or 27 isn't floating his boat at the minute, and he wants to try and have a bit. You know, I think he's 29, 30, as he's hit that age.
Yeah.
And I think at that stage, too, the best judge of these things are always the person directly involved, and it's Jack McGrath. So he has said, Cian Healy has reinvented himself. I was the man in possession. I need to go in and I need to find something. Is it game time I need? Yes, it probably is. I need to get playing 3 out of every 4 weeks. Where can I do that? I don't want to go overseas. I want to play for Ireland. Ulster is a big option. I would say you can underplay and overplay this, but that's what I read out of his interview.
Is that not the same as the Carberry-Murphy examples? In that he's...
No, I don't think at all. One is 33, Joey Carberry's 23.
Fair enough, yeah.
Completely different scenario altogether. One was for the immediate goal of being a realistic option should Johnny get injured for this World Cup, which Carberry needed game time in key Heineken Cup games, which he has done, and which he has done at test level as well. So it's been a win-win scenario, and that's a fact. Geordie Murphy... I think had signed a contract at the end of February, wasn't in Leinster's reckoning at the time, turned that around, put his head down, turned it around. Perception was that he wasn't going to play. He obviously found something, excelled for the rest of the season, won medals for Leinster, and in fairness to him, stayed loyal to Ulster and said, yeah, I signed the contract, I'll honour that, I'm going up there, and put his head down and started to work for Ulster. So, I think these things you have to be very accurate on the message, I suppose, we're delivering. But I think it's feeder probably that would be it would be a big loss I suppose for Leinster most definitely, but I think the big winner could be Jack McGrath.
You were one of we were talking yesterday. This was the thing you wanted to get your teeth stuck into. So go on.
No, not really. Look, I think it's ultimately it's down to the player himself, and maybe he feels his face doesn't fit in Leinster. And look, from a practical point of view, we're talking about money in world rugby, and you cannot blame the players for trying to get the best deal possible. His deal is up a year after the World Cup. I presume if he went to Ulster after this World Cup and was moved, that he would get extended terms and conditions with Ulster, and they would probably pay him, you know, really, really good salary now that potentially he won't get after, you know, going into his last year with Leinster, given where he's at now. Obviously, if he reclaims a number one spot for Ireland and Leinster, it'd be different. But when you get into the over 30, 31, 32, and it's understandable from the RFU's point of view, you're not going to get these three-year deals and not going to get the same terms, although, unless you're Johnny Sexton or Conor Murray, that, you know, they're at the very top end and they're starting. You've got to be starting for Ireland week in, week out. Yeah. You've got to be a big game player for Ireland to be demanding the big money when you get into your 30s. And that's not happening for Jack at the moment. He's a brilliant player. I'm a massive fan of his. And, you know, maybe he feels a change of scenery, a revamp. He hasn't, things haven't been perfect for him since he's come back from that Lions tour, where I felt he was probably the best loose head in Europe.
Yeah.
And probably should have started that, particularly that third test ahead of Makavunipola. But sometimes, you know, he'll know better himself, and maybe that change of scenery is what he wants. But ultimately, he's going to try and get himself a good contract to probably, it potentially could be his last one.
Ronan, we're going to let you off, but your quick word on tomorrow's game, first of all, 2 from 2 so far, things trucking along nicely. Some nice highlight clips doing the rounds as well.
Hey, which highlight clips?
The Matele clip.
From Manassa.
Yes, Yeah.
It's that was a spectacular offload. I think actually people are missing, actually. I think if you go in and watch Richie Mwanga's anticipation to get into space, a good lesson for young kids. He's two big forwards in front of him, but like if he doesn't make that initiate the space, where the space is, it's great. But yeah, I think the most pleasing thing is we actually trained that, you know. That's, you don't train spectacular offloads like that, but you actually, yeah, from a coaching point of view, you encourage that. But that was obviously a dream scenario. But we were lucky to beat the Blues, to be fair, first round. So we're going up against Brad Thorne, a big Leinster favourite tomorrow. He's head coach of the Reds, so the slate is clean. Let's see how we go and reassess when I chat to him Monday or Tuesday. Yeah,
very good, excellent. Thanks, Ronan.
See you.
Thanks, Ronan McGarry on the line there from Brisbane. One last one on Jack McGrath. Like you mentioned about sort of what a quality player he is, Bernard Jackman was on here doing the depth chart of the front row a couple of not only 6-7 weeks ago, and talking about how Jack McGrath would walk onto any other team in the Heineken Cup and walk into any other team, most other teams actually was the expression he used, internationally. And he's obviously fallen a bit behind Dev Kilcoyne even in an Irish context. Yeah. Is that just to do with game time, or is there something else going on?
It's probably to do with game time and you know, playing week in, week out, and if props don't play fairly regularly, they can lose that bit of sharpness and edge. And look, on the back of that line tour, it was a long season for him. And you know, when you're kind of at the top, you've got to keep the secret is maintaining your level of fitness and desire and all that kind of stuff. And maybe that waned a little bit. We don't know the ins and outs of why he hasn't been starting, but we do know that Keane Healy has been playing incredibly well. So it's difficult, and maybe that's frustrated him and had an effect on him. And he didn't start for Leinster against Toulouse, wasn't on the bench for Leinster against Toulouse in Europe in January. So that was probably a big blow for him. Ed Byrne started ahead of him, but it's trying to, as any coach, and Leo Cullen probably has the biggest problem of all, keeping players happy, because there's so many quality players, and that's so many numbers there, and that's why some of them are, or maybe they're being tapped up and being asked, are they interested in going to the other provinces? And if they lose Jack McGrath after Joey Carberry and Geordie Murphy, I think it's a bit of a hammer blow to him, you know. Yeah, but look, you have a little smirk on your face saying it. I'll happily take many Leinster players that are good enough to go down to Munster, and Ulster will take them the same. Because at the end of the day,
they have to prove themselves in a blue jersey first before they get.
At the end of the day, ultimately it's different, and Leinster have. It wasn't long ago we were I was pessimistic about the chances of any of the provinces in Europe, and Leinster just have a conveyor belt of players coming through. But I do have empathy for Mick Dawson as well. You know, they're producing players, and you know, some of these guys are moving on. Mm. Joey Carberry was the biggest blow to him, you know, as a 22-year-old leaving when you're starting out half as 33. You think you have a natural successor and a really top quality current international to take over for him. Losing him was massive for him. But understandably for Jack McGrath, he's checking his options. That's just the way of the world now, Adrian.
Enough,
it didn't happen back in my day because you probably keep the head down you didn't have those options. Yeah. And it was frowned upon if you were looking at going to another province or, you know what I mean, something like that, unless you were down the pecking order. Sean Cronin did it. He went to Connacht via Leinster, became an incredible player for Leinster and international. Owen Redden went to Wasps, came back to Leinster. Trevor Hogan and Stephen Keogh. So and those guys were probably second and third string at the time. Yeah. And I mean that respectfully to them. They felt, I should be more than that. I want to be a starter and I'm not getting a crack at it. And maybe Jack McGrath feels now that, look, he's not going to get close that gap and that he needs to go somewhere else. From an Irish point of view, to have Kilcoyne starting for Munster, or James Cronin, who's, you know, been there before as well and has had a terrible time with injuries, Jack McGrath starting for Ulster, or Eric O'Sullivan.
Poor old Eric O'Sullivan.
Yeah, sort of
he's done the same thing, former Leinster player who's gone up to get game time.
And Healy starting in Keane Healy in Leinster. And Dennis Buckley probably in Connacht. You now have five or six tight heads that are all available to the national team, and that's the bigger picture.
You have an appointment, you need to get out of here.
Correct.
Where are you off to?
I'm going to the gym.
Are you? A
little bit of training.
Pop a bit of weight, or what it's a...
Spin class.
Spin class, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How often do you do that?
A couple of times a week.
Right, good. I've done it a few times.
Good for
a workout.
It's good physically and mentally, to do a little bit, yeah. The body is creaking, though. Knees are sore, hips are sore, back is sore.
War wounds.
The bike is a little less impact, you know. I do a bit of running as well, but anyway.
Yeah, good stuff. Enjoyed
that.
Thank
you, Adrian.
As always, Alan Quillen with us on a Friday. Just a reminder as well that we've been running a brilliant competition all week. It's with thanks to Dove Men Plus Care. We've picked out a daily winner for the last four mornings. They've all gone into the hat for Sunday's draw. We'll be giving you a chance to enter later on, and on Saturday's Off the Ball as well. The winner will be announced on Sunday, and there's a great prize as well for a couple of runners up too. The winner is going to join the RFU kitman John Moran as he prepares the dressing room for the Irish rugby team. It's ahead of their final training session before the big game, and if that isn't enough, the winner is also going to receive a pair of tickets to see Ireland France at the Aviva the following day. So it's a pretty sweet prize to be in with a chance to win. Just tell us what your favourite rugby jersey is. You can tweet us your comment where you're watching the show, and make sure to use the hashtag TeamCare and the hashtag O2BAM, just so we know that you've entered. It makes it life a bit easier for us, and we can pick out your tweet a bit, like this one here from Leah, who is going for the Ireland 2011 special Rugby World Cup jersey. Have you been asked this week, Quinny?
Yeah, I have. I think I picked the French one after my second cap in the old Lansdowne Road.
All right, yeah.
I like the French jersey a lot. There's loads of Irish ones, the World Cup one, the new World Cup ones in 2003, they were cool, the new Canterbury ones that time.
Leinster 2011?
Sorry? Excuse me?
You having that?
I love the
lovely jersey.
The Connacht jersey in 2016, remember when they won the Pro 14, were you over supporting your province?
No, because they're not my province. Leinster 2011, beautiful jersey. Light blue.
Well, they were up against Leinster in that final, weren't they? Was it Leinster in the semi-final?
It was Leinster.
Right, you need to get out to spinning class, so let's wrap this up. The Shot Clock with Kieran Donaghy is a brilliant new segment we're going to bring you every Thursday morning at 8:00 AM, and here's a snippet from episode 3.
You can be 30,000 in Croke Park versus 30,000 in an Olin Park or, you know, one of these stadiums is just no comparison. It'd be great for the revenue in the communities. It'd be great to bring big football games to areas that mightn't see football games. We're trying to promote football in some hurling counties. Bring it down there. Bring both teams an hour and a half away. If people don't want to go an hour and a half away to see a big game between two very good sides, that's their tough. But I would certainly look at bringing all neutral games out of Croke Park. Leave Dublin have their home games there, leave them go for their away games and the neutral venue games in between grounds. It'd be way better.
The worst part about this is that Croke Park knew that there was an issue with this. They knew that the wording that Donegal proposed wasn't going to get forward and they did nothing about it. They could have intervened at any point along the way and they didn't. So they decided to let the whole situation roll over again. Let's get another year of games in Croke Park. And the games in Croker were no good last year.
That's exactly right. How have they have not learned from the games in Croker last year? They were all dead ducks. Like, no atmosphere, no buzz. And we're on about building this super rates like it's going to save the football, and then they bring it all to Croke Park where there's nobody there to see it and it's just dead. So yeah,
the full piece you can check up at our YouTube channel.
Yeah, a couple of other stories actually we wanted to touch on before we wrap up this morning. One of them is surrounding John Jones, the UFC fighter who is in action this weekend against Anthony Smith, who has had a bit of a checkered past when it comes to positive tests and all that sort of stuff. So basically, before Christmas, we had the big story. I think this is when we got peak John Jones regarding the Turinabol finding in his system, where he had a number of picograms in his system, which is just a very kind of barely detectable amount in his system, which USADA said wasn't performance enhancing. But people are asking the question, well, why is it a positive test in the first place? And lo and behold, this week again, it has popped right back up in his system. We can bring you the decision from the Nevada State Athletic Commission on John Jones, released yesterday, and they say that it says on January 29, 2019, John Jones was subjected to random drug testing, and as we can see here on the 1st of February there was no adverse analytical finding from USADA or VADA's tests, but then 13 days later, so on the 1st and on the 9th there was no adverse analytical finding, but on the 14th and on the 15th of last month, there was an adverse analytical finding. Now, this plays into the idea that they were talking about before the new year about this pulsing effect that Turinabol can have in your system. So it doesn't show up in one test, but then a couple of days later, it does show up in your system, which it depends how cynical you are of the whole thing. USADA have come out and said, this is all fine. This science backs this up. This is all completely fine, that there is this pulsing effect, and there is no evidence whatsoever that he's taken this deliberately, and we actually believe that this was accidental ingestion into his system. But again, just come back to the initial point, why is this an adverse analytical finding if it's all okay, particularly in a combat sport? I'm not quite sure. John Jones himself was actually speaking about this yesterday. Now, apologies about the audio on this, but if you listen carefully, you'll be able to hear what he says. It's quite interesting. This is from Ariel Helwani of ESPN on his Twitter account yesterday. He posted this video of John Jones.
Absolutely. You know, every time it's like a whole darn it moment, but I'm comfortable with the idea that it's going to be a part of my career, and I don't know how long this is going to last. What makes me sleep good at night is knowing that I've submitted myself to every drug test. I get tested by three of the most powerful agencies in the world. I've never avoided a test. And I just feel like the more I am accessible, the more data they'll understand, they'll have in the situation, and the more everybody will understand. You know, I'm figuring out that, you know, there's baseball players in Major League Baseball that has the same exact supplement inside of them that are posting as well. I just found out there's another UFC fighter that has the same exact situation. And between Major League Baseball and the UFC, I think they're coming to the conclusion that these drug testing agencies are too powerful. And they're detecting things that don't help athletes at all. And therefore, they're allowing athletes to continue to compete. So I know that I'm almost the leader in this whole development, and I'm comfortable in this space. I wish fans would not just look at the headlines and actually click on the links and read and learn what was really going on.
Yeah, that's very interesting stuff. He actually mentions there that there was another UFC fighter that's going through the same thing at the moment. Now, I personally haven't actually heard of who this other UFC fighter is, so I presume that's breaking news that he inadvertently or perhaps deliberately brought to the MMA public. I'm also always a little bit queasy about anybody who uses the MLB as this tidy
just
thing.
Jumped out like as this, what are you using that sport as a comparison?
Precisely. He also calls the anti-doping authorities as too powerful in that video. again, not sure if I buy that. And also, the thing that he says there at the start, I've passed, or he hasn't passed all the tests, but he has been tested a lot. And, you know,
I couldn't help sniggering.
We've heard that before from other people. I can't help being cynical about this whole thing. I would be interested, actually. His last point, he actually may be bang on. He may say to himself, I hope people can just read beyond the headlines and actually look into this sort of thing. And when you look into this thing and read the reasoned decisions and all that sort of thing, you do get a scientific idea that John Jones is a clean athlete, despite the fact that he's got a dirty history. He has failed previous tests before that. And I think it's fair to say that there has been a little bit of the benefit of the doubt given to him. He's still allowed to fight. And USADA has said that that's okay. So you've got to trust him to a certain level. I've got a suspicion that the opinion on him may actually start to change a little bit more in his favour, because I think before the new year, there was a sense that this was an appalling misstep from the UFC to allow him to fight. Be interested to see how that demeanour changes now over the next couple of weeks.
It's also like apparent from the graph that, like you were talking about, the various tests that are there. The Nevada State Athletic Commission were the first that had carried out the positive test. There was different bodies that carried out the different tests. And what's the? I'd like to know what the process rationale. Why did he do one test for what looked to be
Nevada?
Yeah,
and then USADA did another one. I think that. To be honest, I wouldn't.
Nevada is what, Vegas?
No, voluntary, I think, athletic, voluntary anti-doping association. And they're basically two different organizations in the United States, two different companies that do it. I actually think it makes it more legitimate that you have two different companies testing.
Three or four different bodies were on that graph between USADA, VADA, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, and I think there might have been one other up there as well.
Yeah, but like USADA and VADA would be working on behalf of the Athletic State Commission, I presume, to actually do the tests. Like that, for me, I don't actually mind that too much. What I did concern me was in a previous test, you've been tested by VADA and USADA at a much closer proximity to 8 days, as we saw there, and there were still varying results. One came up as positive, one came up as negative. So, I'm still not entirely sure about that. But, like, again, just going back to my, the fundamental problem here with all of this is that a benefit of the doubt has been given to a fighter. Like, fighters deserve the benefit of the doubt? And if they do, well, let's take the doubt out of it. Let's change what actually is an adverse analytical finding. If these picograms really do represent such a small amount that is not performance enhancing whatsoever, or can do no damage to your opponent whatsoever, or help you to do any further damage, then change the ruling. Change what it actually takes, or change the threshold it takes for this to come up as a positive test. Because if this is the case, that it really has been involuntary ingestion and all that sort of thing, then John Jones's name is being dragged through the mud here.
Okay, a few comments to bring before we bring you our last story of the morning, just on YouTube here. What do Japan and the US have that the Pacific Islands don't? Duh, says Neil Dunphy on YouTube there, which is kind of the point we were making in a bit more of an elongated way. What else have we got here? Welton Man says it's in the interest of the big nations to keep the small Pacific nations poor. They are to sign their players to the local teams and have them qualify for the national teams. And Samoa's a gorgeous holiday joint, and Fiji, says Hanoi Tripper, which should be a consideration. Roshan O'Shea, grow the game for the wealthiest countries. Grow the game, says Roshan O'Shea. John Collins says, did Damien say that Connacht is not his province? What did Damien say when he was on? I can't remember. I don't know, did he say... I don't know who Damien is.
I was about to say, who is Damien?
Probably me, I presume. And if it is me, yes, that's exactly what I said. Dortmund Peter Dowd says, Desmond Macken, as they sold out the best players to Munich every summer, only so much he can do. Liverpool backing him at the transfer market and getting results. That's in relation to a conversation a bit earlier about Jurgen Klopp. So that's pretty much it on that front. Have you anything to add?
There's
to?
One more thing.
No, there is. Yeah, I just thought you had made some reaction to those, to Damien's point about Connacht. Right, we very top of the show mentioned about Declan Rice and the fact that he, Nathan's failed attempt, if you were with us a bit earlier, to speak to Declan Rice earlier this morning. If you haven't seen it, have a look at this.
Should we grab a quick word, Declan?
No, you can't. Well, it turns out that he did snub the Irish media after all, and he decided that he was going to speak to the English media.
Probably it is the toughest decision I've probably had to make so far in my career. You know, being so young, didn't think I would, you know, ever be in a position to make that call. But, you know, it's a call that I've made and you know, this one that I'm looking forward to in the future.
Snob.
those quotes basically illustrated was just that video there. Oh, it's so cold, isn't it? It's
grand, isn't it? Like those, well, like whatever.
I'm moving on with my life, Declan. I hope you're moving on with yours.
Right, that is pretty much it from us for this morning. Joseph O'Brien is going to be along for Friday night racing as well, so do keep an eye on that and our off the ball social channels over the afternoon. That'll be one to keep an eye on. Crappy quiz tonight as well, looking forward to that. Loads more for you as well across off the ball over the weekend. Saturday, live from 1 o'clock on News Talk, and Sunday as well. On Sunday, it's Fulham and Chelsea. Fulham under new management, of course, temporary, albeit for the minute, 2:05. Stephen Doyle and Kenny Cunningham are going to talk you through that one. And then Nathan and Kevin Kilbane are going to be at Goodison Park for 4:15, kick-off between Everton and Liverpool. So Nathan and Kev at that one. And that's pretty much it for us for the morning, Owen.
It is indeed.
Let's end it as we always do. What are the plans for the weekend?
Kerry Monaghan on Sunday.
And via Waterford for Bowes.
Like going via Waterford to Kerry is really showing up your geographical lack of knowledge.
But it's not going to add, like, I admit that it'll obviously clearly add a bit of time onto your journey, but it's not a ridiculous suggestion.
It's fairly ridiculous. As much as I hope my dear Bows do get the job done tonight down in Waterford, it just doesn't work in my schedule this weekend.
You could write, you know, the piece that was done during the week about Shells, that sort of poem to Shells, the ode to Shells. You could write Dear Bows.
How do you know I haven't already?
Oh, you might have done.
Yeah.
You're just keeping it.
Stewie Byrne's got to watch his back. I'm coming for number one next week.
We have been talking so much this morning that the TV behind you has gone on standby. You might have noticed that. Little plug there for Samsung. How are you getting on? We're going to leave you with more of this one, though. The brilliant new single, Superstar, by the one and only Stewie Byrne. Good morning.
Let's hear it. Stewie Byrne, Superstar.
Drum to your beating pulse.
So, if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 AM.